Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. We're less than a month away from Ohio State opening the season in the Shoe against Ball State on September 5th. Fall camp is in full swing for the Buckeyes. Ryan Day joined the guys on Fan Sports Saturday this weekend and said that this season's schedule is helping keep the team's attention in practice.
I think we have an excellent schedule. We have a lot of great challenges coming, and I think it certainly has our attention in preseason camp, making sure that we have a lot of urgency in everything we do, knowing what's ahead of us.
Rough weekend on the diamond for Ohio's Major League Baseball teams. The Guardians dropped 2 of 3 to the White Sox, while the Reds were swept by the Nationals, both with off days today before starting new series tomorrow. Cleveland heads north to face the Tigers in Detroit, while Cincy travels to Chicago to battle the White Sox. This one brought to you by TurboTrack Realty. Done with that property? Call John Kozik at TurboTrack Realty and get a cash offer today. 614-470-2000. Breaking sports news as it happens on The Fan.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he's handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Monday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Bake is here. Isaiah is here. 20 most interesting closes today with the Oregon Ducks. We will get into the Ducks coming up at 11 o'clock. 10 o'clock hour, we started off with the Weekend Blitz. Austin joins at 10:30. Is this the year of Julian Sand? You could make an argument that it might need to be. We will get to that as the program goes along around 9:30. But we should start here. This was a special 3 days that we had at Ohio State football camp. And of course, a great many people are aware that we were there and what we saw. And I had, I would say, a rough estimate of about 1,000 people come and ask me, how did they look? And my answer to that was ended up being a stock answer. And it was, they look like Buckeyes to me. They look like Buckeyes. So what does that mean? Well, what that means is the Los Angeles Dodgers are a big part of the lexicon right now in sports, that they are this team that is can spend so much, that is so good that it's almost not fair. They're going to put in a salary cap, all of these things. In European soccer, they've done this financial fair play rule to try to limit some of the dominance of the teams over there. The short answer of it is the Ohio State football team is the Los Angeles Dodgers. They are Real Madrid. You go to every single summer camp and you say, yeah, go win the national title. The follow-up inevitably from how did they look was, well, do you think that they can win it? Yeah, I think they can win it. I do think they can win it. They're starting the year number one in the country. One of the most incredulous things, that just so hard to believe, was the conversations that we had with Ross and with Ryan and with various players, and they were so gracious with their time. But one of the things that was pretty consistent was this notion, this, and I remember talking to Brandon Innes specifically about this on Friday when I said, look, you lost 4 top 11 picks in the NFL draft and you're ranked number one in the country. Like, what are we doing? Nobody has it like this anymore. Bama had it like this for the Saban years, for 10 years, they had it like this. Where's Bama now? Ranked 15th? Something like that? Who's got it like this? It's the long and it's a very, very short list, and it might just be a list of one. Oregon's trying to get on this list. They've been consistently good. We're going to talk about the Ducks in the 11 o'clock hour, but they have not won a national title. Ohio State has provided you the ultimate success of a national title while also providing you the warm blanket of being a great team every single year. And, Bake, you said something. I can't remember if it was Thursday or Friday on the show. It was Friday because we did 20 Most Interesting Ohio State on Friday. And you said, I don't remember in the Tress era waking up every season in August and saying, go win the national title. And you're right.
You were exactly right. You remembered that exactly. We didn't do that. We didn't go into every season saying, go win the national title. There were some. Certainly, Troy's senior year, go win it. The following year, they kind of came out of nowhere. There was probably a prior year, maybe his junior year, Terrell Pryor's junior year, when you said, yeah, go win it. That one kind of had that feel to it coming off the win against Oregon in the Rose Bowl from the year before. But there wasn't this thing of go win the national title every year. That was an urban phenomenon, and it was a Ryan Day standard. It's become a Ryan Day standard. I don't know if it's always fair. And I do think we as a collective have to do a pretty good job of enjoying the journey on this stuff. We talked about this a lot last season. Similar spot, right? Where we said, look, like, enjoy this. Take full advantage of this. This is the golden era of Ohio State football, and this is going to be a fun ride. This team's probably going to lose some games. The schedule's too tough to get through it without some sort of misses here or there. That'll probably happen. But just in terms of the standard and staying there, there's nobody else quite like it. And even amidst Buckeye history, which is so illustrious, this run that you're in here over the last decade or so with Urban and now Ryan, there's really no precedent for this, guys. It was a really great observation at UBIC. We didn't go up. This is a relatively new phenomenon that we're having now.
Yeah, and on the weekends on the call-in show, we have been doing something where we've been going back and we've been doing our all Urban Meyer team, our all Ryan okay. Day team, our all yep. Jim Tressel team, and our all John Cooper team. Mm-hmm. And you probably had more aspirations about winning a national title during the John Cooper era because the teams were right. so great, the players that you had, but there was always that bugaboo that was Michigan at the mm-hmm. end of the year during those years. And when Urban Meyer came here, it all changed. But you know what I love the most? And you talked about Brandon Ennis. And
yeah.
we had some great interviews last week yeah. that you guys did out there. Go find them wherever you find your podcasts or they're on our socials. Matt Patricia was great. James is always great. James Smith might be my new favorite Buckeye of all time.
That went a little viral.
That was pretty awesome.
But that the story went a little viral.
The end of Brandon Ennis's interview, I loved so much because mm-hmm. he said, we don't really care about that right now, though.
Yeah.
We care about being number one at the end. And that shows mm-hmm. you that these guys are focused on the task at hand. And I just thought that was so impressive. And Brandon Ennis, I don't think there's any doubt. He is one of the leaders on this team. Yeah. Like if he goes out there week one and he has the block O on his chest, that jersey, I don't think anybody would be shocked by that. No. At all. So mm-mm. this is a guy that is setting the tone from your team, and he's getting that set to him from Cortez Hankton, from Arthur Smith, from Ryan Day. And I thought that was one of the most impressive answers that we had all weekend.
And one of the things that was really interesting the whole weekend was that all the messaging was so clear. There was never different answers from player to player or player to coach. Every single person was giving, if you were asking them what the goals were for the season, everybody knows the goals. Everybody knows the order in which this operation has to go for them to get where they want to go. And there was no confusion from any player to any coach the entire weekend, which just shows Ryan Day and Matt Patricia and Arthur Smith, like they've got those guys heads in a tunnel. We're all going in the same direction, rowing the boat right now. That was really impressive walking away too.
You guys both bring up something that I think is pretty interesting. Ryan is not from Ohio. He's not. He's from New Hampshire. You know, he got here before the 18 season as an offensive coordinator and has been thrown into this. But when you talk to him, he's a Buckeye. he's hit through and through. Arthur Smith has, to my knowledge, we had him on. That was a great interview. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that on Friday, I don't think anybody else has had him in a one-on-one scenario.
No.
I could be wrong. I apologize.
I don't think so.
People have, but I think we're the only ones to ever have him in a one-on-one scenario like that. I think I am. I think we are. I think we're right on that. He doesn't have any ties here. Matt doesn't have any ties here. Threes, that's different. Yeah, he's got ties. But the idea that you can get complete buy-in on what it means to patrol those sidelines and wear those colors and represent this state that quickly, and have it not just go from the general, in Ryan, his top lieutenants and his coordinators, but also his that has already gotten through to 50 new players. You mentioned that they all had this, they were all rowing in the same direction. Isaiah, yes, they are. They've done it. They had a, they, you go to culture camp when you get here. And from the look of it, I'm not going to say it's all perfect up there. Obviously, Legend Bay missed some days of practice. I mean, there's been some stuff, but by and large, complete buy-in, complete messaging, complete culture takeover. It's all happened. Can they, will they win the national title? I have no idea. They're going to get in the playoff. Once you get there, it's about matchups and luck and a million other things. And there will be some questions. There's some questions that I think are fair to ask of this team as we go into this. But you got a shot. And that's the beautiful thing about being a Buckeye. That's a beautiful thing about being a Buckeye fan. That's a beautiful thing about doing this show in this town, because we get to help hold them to that standard. And that is rare in sports, very rare in sports. I did have some questions coming out of the first 3 days of camp, just in terms of where some things are going to shake out, some things that I'm curious to see what this looks like, even in the opener, but obviously down in Austin. We will get to that coming up next. We're off and running on a Monday. Bishop and Friends right here.
Remember the old days when football used to have an off season? Well, we at the Fan think that really sucked. That's why we bring you Austin and Berm, America's number one resource for Buckeye football conversation, is voted by Fake Surveys Incorporated. Catch their daily podcast called The Beat and their breaking news podcast, Snap Judgments, as they broadcast live from Roosters on Mondays, and they come right to your house and massage your tender areas. They'll do it all. Austin and Berm on the Fan's YouTube channel and 10TV Plus. Common Man and Timmy are putting together a hangout at the radio station for a small amount of listeners. Pizza will be involved. Ping pong, too. Lots of inappropriate conversation. And don't forget, pin the tail on Teddy. Tell Man and Timmy why you're the perfect guest by emailing goodcleanboy@gmail.com.
Presented by Billiards Plus and sponsored by Paisano Peppers.
The event takes place Thursday, August 13th, and all email submissions must be in by August 10th. Enter today. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a chance of some scattered showers pushing across the area this morning. Otherwise, mostly cloudy skies. Later on today, some showers and thunderstorms redevelop, and some of those could be strong to severe with gusty winds and locally heavy rain. Otherwise, it's a humid day with mixed clouds and sun, highs in the upper 80s. For tomorrow, scattered showers and thunderstorms are likely. Those, too, could be strong to severe. We'll see humid conditions with highs again in the mid-80s. For the Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The friends are the guests and listeners. Reese and Baker just work here.
Back to work. Back to work. Everybody. Work, 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 work. Work, work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
There are questions. I mean, this is the number one team in the country. Go win a national championship, all those things. They certainly could do it, but there are questions. And I think the things that you would say at the top of that list are, what is that offensive line inevitably going to look like? What are going to be the best five there? They move that around a little bit. Another one that jumps out to me, guys, is on the defensive front, is there a game wrecker up there that can truly be a difference maker? Is Kenyatta ready to be that type of player and be an absolute game wrecker up front? Can Mr. Smith, who's our buddy, close personal friend, can he be one of these guys who is an absolute difference maker? One of the guys that we consistently heard a lot about was Earl Little Jr. Just that name kept being popped around. So what impact does he have? What does that rotation look at linebacker? Feel pretty dang good about the corners. I think they got a chance to be really elite. Safeties, too. Obviously, no Caleb. Matt said they're going to rotate through a lot of those guys when he was on with us on Thursday, that they're just going to have a little bit more depth kind of across the board. Those questions all jump out. Offensively, there's some, too, beyond the offensive line. In terms of trustable receivers, who are those? Devin McEwen had himself a day on Friday. By the way, how about that? How about that? How about a kid who goes to UTSA, never has a 1,000-yard season at UTSA? The most touchdowns he ever had in a season was 8, which was last year. His best season in terms of yards per reception was 13. That's when he was a freshman. And somehow that guy, they find him, plug him in, and it looks like he's going to be a big-time impact guy. Can Brock Boyd become that? Well, Chris Henry, what impact will he have? The Legend Bay weapon part of this, when will he be ready? Sounds like he had kind of a rough opening practice on Saturday. And then the running back rotation, will it actually be one? Is it going to be Bo and Isaiah? So those are some of the things that just kind of jump out. These are all first-world problems, but I do think some answers need to be provided for those questions before you roll into Austin.
I think the question that I need answered the most, Bo, is has Reese showered since getting two hugs from Matt Patricia? I think that's the real question here, and I'm guessing that he hasn't, which is probably tough for our guy because he's a clean dude. So
he is, yeah.
I do not have – there are questions, I guess, for me on the offensive side of the ball, but I really am not worried about those questions because I think they're going to work themselves out with Jeremiah and with Julian and with both of those running backs, because everybody said Bo Jackson looked really good too. Isaiah West just looks that good, and we know what Bo Jackson did last year as a freshman. That's 1,100 yards. I think the offensive line is going to be fine, and you know me. I'm a big Josh Padilla fan.
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing what he did in games when he got in, he seems to be a dude that can play. And it was promising to me that the last those second and third days of practice that he was in there at right guard, because I think he's a guy that is a really good player. And if you have those three with him, Carson Hensman, and Luke Montgomery on the inside of that line, I think you're going to be really good, and then you can figure it out with Saraveld and Ian Moore and Philip Daniels, figure out your tackle spot. So that was promising to me because I think Josh Padilla can play. The wide receiver thing is interesting, and I've thought all along it was just going to be Jeremiah Smith, Chris Henry Jr., and Brandon Ennis in the slot.
Yep.
And I still, and I wasn't out there, I still have a hard time. The investment that Ohio State put into Chris Henry Jr., and the talent that he has, I have a hard time not seeing him out there a majority of the time. So this Devin McCune thing is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Does he take snaps from Chris Henry Jr.? Or he seems more kind of like a slot guy. Does he take those snaps from Brendan Ennis? Whatever, I think those are all going to work themselves out. My questions are on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And I think it's all D-line for me, and maybe who that nickel corner is, because hearing that a true freshman was running with the ones at the nickel corner was kind of eye-opening to me, because you kind of thought, or you've kind of heard that Earl Little was going to be that guy, and then maybe Terry Moore would be their back deep safety with Jalen McClain. But having Jay Timmons in there, that's a guy we really need to pay attention to, or maybe there's an issue on the inside that wasn't there last year.
Yeah, on that front, you know, I wonder, I'm very curious how they deploy Little. Now, I'll be candid with you, the first team defense, I didn't get to see it. It was on the other end. So on Friday when we were so close, I didn't get to see how they were rotating through and kind of who was bouncing around there. So they weren't, I couldn't tell you exactly how they use it. My hunch is, you know, so many teams are going to that three safety look. I wonder if maybe that's what they'll do with Little and have him be one of those three safeties and maybe have him sneak down in the box a little bit. I don't know. The Timmons stuff is pretty interesting. I mean, Devin Sanchez played a lot as a true freshman last year. I don't remember if he was up with the ones on day two of camp. I don't think that happened in the nickel last year. That came along as the season went along, as he kind of played himself into that. He looks great, by the way. So I think those are fair and valid questions in terms of just how they go about it defensively. That was something that Matt said when he was on with us Thursday, that when I asked him about how do you replace those three guys, and he said, I don't use the word replace, but what we're going to probably do is just play more numbers. So I think they're going to rotate through more guys there. I think Threes is going to rotate through his linebackers a little more than he did last year, because you're not taking Sonny and Arbell off the field. You're just not. You're not going to take Peyton Pierce off the field. So, but beyond that, I think you're going to move some guys through a little bit. But I do think that those things are all fair questions. Here's the deal, though, Isaiah. They don't need to be the number one defense in the country with this offense. They just need to be in the top 20. If you're in the top 20, that's good enough. And I think they'll be there.
And it's funny because when I left camp on Saturday, I felt so strongly about how the offense looked. And there are questions around the wide receiver room, and I thought that was one of the more interesting groups to watch as I was there, because you have Jeremiah Smith, and then similarly to you, Bake, coming in, I was like, Brandon Ennis, wide receiver two, probably Chris Henry Jr., wide receiver three playing on the outside. I left camp on Saturday and thought 2, 3, 4, and 5 between Brock Boyd, Devin McCune, Chris Henry Jr., and Brandon Ennis looked very tight to me. Devin McCune on Friday was fantastic. He has the over-the-top speed. He got 3 or 4 bombs from Julian that looked really, really good. And so I think he's going to push Brandon Ennis, because I think he does fit better in that slot role. If you have Jeremiah and Chris Henry Jr. both on the outsides, do I think it takes away from Brandon Ennis? Possibly, but they kind of have different games. Ennis looked really good in the underneath work, where McEwen's a little bit more twitchy, fast speed. So I think they'll be able to utilize them all, and I'm excited how it's going to look. But when you see that wide receiver core and how Julian's looked so far, it just makes you feel that much more confident about where the offense is at right now. And then let the defense figure it out. I don't think we'll be in a place where we were last season, where Texas opening game, we went slow and tried to slow the game down because the defense was there and we knew that Arch and them really weren't going to score. This year it's going to be, how many points can our offense put up and can our defense stop enough to be able to keep us in the game?
Bo, yeah,
go ahead, Beck.
You said something really interesting there about the defense, where you said all they've got to be is top 20.
Yeah.
And maybe this is how spoiled we are, or maybe I am as a Buckeyes fan. I have no doubt this defense is going to be top 10 this year. They may not be number one like they are the last two seasons, but I have no doubt they're going to be a top 10 defense.
Yeah, that's just how spoiled we are. Like, that's just ridiculous.
It's embarrassment of riches.
It is, yeah. I mean, like, and by the way, the dudes you lost, I don't know if you've paid attention at all to NFL training camps through the first 2 weeks, but Caleb Downs makes a play every single day in Cowboys camp. I believe we had that. I remember sitting at the combine. I cannot remember who the NFL draft expert was, but one of these expert nitwits that I was talking to was saying that he didn't have Caleb as his number one safety, and he didn't have him as a top 20 prospect. And I just thought, have you watched any film of what this dude is, any film at all? Because he's lighting it up. And Sonny, same thing. Sonny had a great moment on Saturday in Commanders camp, where normally the veterans, the guys who the, and I did the show with these guys once, they were talking about Sonny, but they have like a set for like their team show. So they have a set, and they usually have a cart drive the players over to the set. Sonny walked, and they said, usually guys take a cart. And Sonny said, I'm young, I got legs. And I thought, well, you're welcome. You got a captain of the defense for the next 15 years. Enjoy him, because he's going to be unbelievable. So, yeah, I think we're probably that's the thing with this. All of these questions that we have, and I use the air quotes, these are all first world problems. 99% of the teams in the country would pray to, and these aren't even problems. These are just questions. There's answers to the test. Who's going to be the three receivers that are out there primarily? Well, geez, you're either going to have a five-star Chris Henry as a true freshman out there. You're going to have Brock Boyd, who's absolutely been a star throughout the entire offseason. Devin McCune kind of comes out of nowhere. Or you get Brandon Ennis, who's, I think Brandon's going to play, going to be out there all the time. I think him and Jeremiah. The other thing to pay attention to with that, I think Arthur is going to be very creative with Jeremiah. I think they're going to run him on a lot of crossers. I think they're going to move him around. I think, obviously, opposing defenses are going to bracket him, double him all the time, but I think they are going to find creative ways to get Jeremiah the ball on the run. I think you're going to see a lot of that. Now, the guy who's going to be responsible for pulling the trigger on all of this was a Heisman finalist in his first year as a starter. Can Julian Sain truly become a great Buckeye quarterback? The standard in the last decade plus has been absurdly high. Is he up to it? We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a Monday edition of the program. Here are the list of Buckeye quarterbacks who have been Heisman finalists. Troy Smith won it. Dwayne Haskins, Justin Fields, C.J. Stroud, and Julian Sain. Those are the list of guys. That's a pretty impressive list. You can also see the recency in that list, right? You come here now, you play quarterback. And by the way, they got another good one over the weekend that's coming in the 2028 class. And you're going to be going to the Downtown Athletic Club. That's just the way that it works. Julian did that in year one. I don't know that anybody foresaw that happening in year one. Certainly thought it would potentially be a possibility, but then he got there. Now, in order to be, this is the spot he's in, and this kind of goes back to, there's a theme here, right, with the standard absurdly high. In order for him to go down, we spent, I want to say it was last week or the week before, we were talking about Jeremiah and the potential to be the greatest Buckeye player of all time and being on that list. What does he need to do? And initially I thought, well, win another national title and win a Heisman. I don't think he needs to do both of those things. If he does one of them, that might do it. For Saiyan to go down as an all-time great Buckeye, he needs to do one of those things probably this year. Look at how popular Will Howard is here because he captained in spirit and actual a national championship team. He is absolutely beloved around here for that. You are remembered forever for that. That's what's on the plate for Julian this year. He looked different. He looked bigger. He looked stronger. One of the consistent things that we heard throughout camp, and we talked to whether it would be Julian or other players, guys who were protecting him, like Austin Saraval, guys like Brandon Ennis who were catching balls from him, offensive coordinator Arthur Smith, was that vocally, and Brandon said this on Friday with us, vocally, Julian is far more vocal than he was a year ago. And you probably saw this if you're one of the fortunate folks out in camp or if you've seen some of the videos from camp that have been bandied about. You see him being much more demonstrative, getting guys lined up, getting him in spots. This is a much more confident dude. Julian was available on Saturday and was asked about the year of experience and how it's helped.
Yeah, I think, you know, having the year of experience is definitely something that helps. And then, you know, just being able to kind of improve my physical traits the offseason helped me something.
He's up to 215 pounds. He weighed in on that as well.
Yeah, I'm about 215 now, so a little bit heavier than last year. And, you know, it was very helpful in the offseason. You know, Coach Mick pushed me pretty hard, and I think the extra weight has helped me in, you know, throwing the ball and running the ball.
I don't need him running.
I'm with you.
I don't want this to be something that we're worried about. I don't want him running.
I don't either, and I have no doubt that 215 has helped him in running the ball because it looked like he gained a lot of that in his legs. Yeah. Just the pictures that I saw from him out there, his trunk and his lower half look a lot thicker. But I'm the same. I want my quarterback using his mobility to make plays downfield. I don't want them being scared of running if they have to, if that's what's there. But I don't need him. I don't want him doing it.
No. No.
But take it if it's there. There's no reason. Third down and three. If it's there, take it. Run out of bounds. Get your slide.
Fine. I don't need him putting his nose down in and trying to get an extra 2 yards. Like that. Do that in the national championship game. Like you don't do that like Mendoza in the national title game. Okay, fine. I don't need to do that in regular season play. Ryan was on with T-Bone and Tyvus on Thursday, and they asked him about Julian's leadership and how that's come over a year.
He's somebody who, to me, one, cares a lot about his teammates, but two, is very, very intelligent. Now, one of the smarter guys that I've been around. We've had some really smart quarterbacks here. But he can really handle high levels of information fast, and I think that's one of the things that the guys respect in a big way. But you know, I say this all the time. If you want to get on the field here, if you want to be a legend here, if you want to be a great player at Ohio State, one, get on special teams, which a quarterback can't do. But two, attach yourself to Mick Marotti. Because if you want credibility, and that's exactly what he's done, you know, and he understands what it means to have that stamp from Mick in the building. And so he's done that, but now we got to go put on the field.
Absolutely, he will. Good interview by mostly T-Bone. Tyvus didn't do much with that. I didn't think. I mean, I don't know if he participated much.
He's in there. I'm not sure. He's listening though.
I see
or not,
him.
But
I see him. Go ahead, Beck.
I was just going to say, do you know what that answer reminded me of from Ryan Day there?
Yeah.
Was everything we heard about Lincoln Keenholz last year. And it's probably the reason Lincoln Keenholz stayed in a quarterback battle with Julian so long, as he was a guy that was named an Iron Buckeye. He went in there. He did the work with Mick, and that's showing your leadership. And I'm sure not only having Will Howard before him, but seeing Lincoln do that last year has helped Julian realize that and led him on the path he is this offseason.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a pretty good point out of you. And I think, look, we talked to Saravold about this on Thursday. They all heard it. They all heard that when it came time to the Indiana and the Miami game, the knock on them was they weren't tough enough, that they couldn't protect, that they couldn't keep, you know, those two defensive lines, they couldn't keep them out of Julian's face. So they heard it. Julian heard it. Julian heard he took so much heat for those two losses, a disproportionate amount of heat. He heard it. It fueled his offseason. There's not a single doubt in that. There's one other wrinkle to this, though. And I do think that this is something that is going to be, I don't know if we've talked about it enough. I think it's possible that Arthur Smith's impact on this offense will be similar to Matt Patricia's last year on the defense. Because I think what's going to happen is you are going to have Ryan Day have complete trust in Arthur on game day and in game calling and game planning and all of it. Obviously, it's going to be collective. Arthur even said when he was on with us, look, I had to learn the new terminology. This is Arthur calling the Buckeye offense. But it's also Ryan having complete trust and then Arthur adding his own wrinkles to it. He was energized to be here. He was excited about working with Saiyan. Here he was. He was on with us on Friday talking about working with Julian.
Yeah, Julian's been awesome. I've been really impressed. Like he's got a really instinctive football mind. You know, he's very, very intelligent above the neck. You know, when I first met him, I didn't realize it was him because I thought he was like, you know, 14. I thought he was a coach's kid or something walking around the building. But I love his demeanor for a guy, you know, he's sharp. He works at it. He's been fun to work with.
Do you think like him being baby-faced is part of the doubting? Just that Julian looks so young?
I don't think so, because aren't most quarterbacks baby-faced? Like,
they're all handsome usually, but he does look, I think he could pass for like, if you just saw like a picture and you didn't see him walk in, you didn't see his actual size, I think he could pass for like a 16, 17-year-old.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And people think he is small. Like I was talking to some buddies yesterday at the pool, and they were talking about, I was talking about Tavian and how he looked. They were like, Tavian's huge. And then they were like, Julian probably looks tiny next to him. I'm like, Julian doesn't look tiny. Like Julian's not a small guy. He's like you say, he's 215 pounds. He's 6'1". Like he's not a small guy, but when you see just his face, I think it does add to it because they think he's small. And last year he was skinnier. He's noticeably bigger.
No doubt. You notice it, Bake. It's a good observation out of you. You notice it in his lower body as much as anything, like his legs, his base. Yeah, that's the part that you definitely know. Arthur Smith, though, to bring it back to him, I think that's a game changer. I think that's a game changer. I think that what he will bring to the Buckeye offense is just imagine that level of acumen, NFL level acumen, NFL head coach acumen. Now, you're paratrooping into an offense that's been as great as this one has been, and now you get a fresh set of eyes on it, a fresh set of ideas. Just think what he picked up orchestrating the Tennessee attack. Think what he picked up with Aaron Rodgers last year in Pittsburgh, although offensively they weren't maybe the most creative team you're ever going to see. A lot of that was Aaron. Aaron just wanted the ball out in about a second and a half. But just from an idea standpoint, the things that he's going to put on this, and now he's pushing that through Julian. And then Julian intellectually can handle all of it. He's a brilliant kid. He's a bit of a supercomputer, so he can handle all of those things. So they're going to be able to do some things around here offensively that are going to be pretty high-level concept stuff, and maybe that's why some of those freshmen have a harder time getting in the receiver room as well, as just a side. Go ahead, Bick.
It wasn't lost on me that Ryan Day talked about Julian's intelligence, and then Arthur Smith dropped it in there as well. And the Arthur Smith point, I think, is very good in the fact that it's not going to be exactly like Chip Kelly, where Chip Kelly and Ryan almost had the same mind. Like Ryan learned under Chip and they just had that relationship for so long. But it is going to be different in the fact that I think Ryan is going to be more free to be a head coach of this team, a CEO of this team. And I think he's going to trust Arthur Smith taking care of the offense, even though I still believe this is Ryan Day's offense and Arthur Smith is just driving the car. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure how comfortable Ryan was last year not being in the car with Brian Hartline.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah. And even Ryan and Chip was almost mentoree the other way. And then last year, it would have been the other way. Ryan, there's not going to be any of that here. This is going to be two peers who both have incredible offensive acumen working collectively with a brilliant quarterback to see what the ceiling can be on it. So Austin Ward's going to join us at 10:30. We'll get his take on what he saw through the first 3 days of camp. Coming up next, we perhaps a leader in the clubhouse up in the Browns quarterback competition. We will get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on
The Reds are on the Fan's family of stations all season long. If you don't listen, Terry Francona will ride his scooter to your house and yell at you. Your home of the Reds. The Fan. The Fan 2 and The Fan 3.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. Home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Reaser's mustache is so nice, it has its own area code. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Well, it's that time of year, kids. Home's in town. You know that in August you're going to get those aggressive yellow jackets, those wasps. Don't wait for the invasion. Protect your property and your family with Rose Pest Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection for one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. So, a lot, man, gosh, there's a lot being made of this Browns quarterback competition, if it's equitable and all of this. Listen, guys, life's not fair. The best guy's going to win. Todd Monken doesn't have a dog in the fight. He doesn't. He just wants whoever's best. Todd Monken wants to win his game. This is a 60-year-old man getting his first chance to be an NFL head coach. You think he's got an agenda other than winning?
Yeah, Todd Monken has Todd Monken in mind, and that's winning games.
He wants to win, dude. Like, there is such a delusional part of especially the X platform that is just gross and just silly, honestly, borderline silly. The last practice that I saw up there was a week ago Wednesday. Last Wednesday was the last one I saw. That's the best quarterback play that I have seen from a Browns quarterback since Baker's first year with Kevin. In terms of just in practice, I mean, Flacco had some too, but we didn't have full access to those. Those were later in the season. Those weren't training camp practice. I'm talking about a spectacular training camp practice. Deshaun Watson had one on Wednesday. Okay. This was something that had been your day, my day, your day, my day. And then after that performance on Wednesday, Watson appears to have taken a little bit of a lead and you had a couple more reps going his way. And then on Saturday, from all of the reporting that I've seen and all the reading I've done on it, Watson got the ones on a day that was supposed to be a Shador day. These are not children. These are grown men, professional athletes. You're not entitled to anything. It's up to the coach to decide who plays, and he's seen enough from Watson, obviously, by what has happened in the days since Wednesday, that Deshaun appears to have taken a lead. And I said this on our show Friday, and I stand by it. My hunch is Deshaun will start the preseason game in Chicago on Saturday, and then my hunch would be that Shador would start the preseason game the following week. And then after that, I think you're going to get an answer on who your quarterback is against the Bills. But the one practice to really watch is going to be that joint practice Thursday with Buffalo. That'll be the one that'll let you know kind of where they're going. He can't monkey around with this too long, guys. This season's coming quick. Like, they've been practicing up there for a while. They had an entire off-season program that they've gone through as well. Like, Todd Monken has a pretty good idea of what he wants to do with this thing. I don't know if you've ever listened to a Monken presser. He's pretty direct. You ask him a question, you're going to get a direct answer. So I don't think he's going to be somebody who can't make his mind up. I think maybe what you're seeing is you had two guys who went at it toe-to-toe. Deshaun pulled ahead is certainly what you could read from that. All of the pieces matter, and I would say he's in the pole position to be the starting quarterback of the Browns, and that's something that's happened in the last 5 or 6 days, probably in the last 3 or 4 practices that started to really take shape, really starting with that practice on Wednesday. It's nothing more than that. There's no grand conspiracy here. There's none of that.
And it sounds like Deshaun rewarded them with another really good day of practice on Saturday from a lot of the things that you've heard from people who were there in. You're right, Bo. You can't wait on this because Deshaun Watson's a veteran, but he hasn't played a lot of football recently. Mm-mm. So Deshaun Watson needs reps, especially in this new offense. And if Shador's the guy, Shador is still a guy who hasn't played a ton of football in the National Football League, so he needs reps. So whoever is taking the lead in this, you can't wait and continue this 50-50 competition.
No.
As you head into preseason games and games that matter, these practices with other teams that matter. So you've got to get your guy out there, and you have to get him reps and get him ready for the season. And I don't think this is any surprise at all, just for the sheer fact, as you've said, Shador has had trouble getting his team out of the huddle and to the offensive line. And I am sure that's something that drives Todd Monken crazy in practice and is going to make him go insane in a game.
To be fair, the last couple of practices, Shador came, he got better at that, but it was still there. It was really a problem early in camp, but it last week that started to clear up a little bit. And again, I wasn't at practice Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, so I can't speak to, you know, what those looked like. But yes, Bake, that's procedural stuff, pretty critical.
And it's one of those things, too, where Todd Monken has said all throughout the offseason, he'd love to name a starting quarterback. He'd love to have a guy picked out and say, hey, we're trying him out here. This is our guy going forward. Because the earlier you can get the ones all working with the ones, the better week one is going to look. And that's how it is at every single NFL franchise across the entire country. If you have a starting franchise quarterback, guess who's getting all the reps with the ones? That guy. Because he needs to work with Denzel Boston. He needs to work with KC Concepcion. Like, they're trying to get a new offense installed, and the chemistry is a part of it, too. You want those guys working with the number one running backs, the number one O-line, the number one tight ends, the number one wide receivers, so that when season rolls around, you don't start 1-3, 1-4, dig yourself a hole. And like you said, Tom Monken, there's no guarantee that this will be his only head coaching job. You could get one season as an NFL head coach.
Oh,
you might never get another one again. And so what's his mindset going into the season is survival. I need to win as many games as possible so that I can ensure that I get a second year.
100%. Yeah, it's his only motivation, all of this. And I think sometimes there's this, I think sometimes people forget that Shador was a fifth-round pick. He wasn't number five overall. This isn't something where it's like, man, we used a one on Jackson Dart, man. We got to get him. He needs to play. He's got to validate this experiment. Shador was a fifth round pick. He wasn't even the number one pick by this general manager in his own draft at quarterback. Dylan was a third round pick. Dylan was a third. Shador was a five, right? So it was going to be a long shot as a fifth round pick to work your way up. And because obviously if you're a fifth round pick, the whole league feels that there are deficiencies that were there in the process that led to all of the teams passing on you. And Shador's done great. Physically, he looks great. He throws a beautiful ball. He's made plays almost every day. I even said this on the show here, and I've said it on Cleveland Browns Daily as well. He was in the first week or so of camp, he was the only quarterback who would try to throw it down the field. Dylan and Deshaun were check down Charlie. Check, 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 constantly. Teddy KGB. Shador would throw it down the field. So he's looked really good, but he is a fifth round pick, and he was a fifth round pick for a reason. So there are deficiencies that he's working through, and give him credit because he's done a lot of that to put himself in a position as a fifth round pick to battle for a starting job. And it just seems like Deshaun's maybe taken a little bit of a lead on that over the last couple of days. I'll get out there today and I'll give you a better idea what things are going to look like by the time we get done with that. Second hour of the program coming up next. Austin Ward coming up at 10:30. We blitz the weekend first. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Day started with T-Bone and Tybus weekday mornings from 6 to 9 here on The Fan. You think that a radio lifer and a national title winner wouldn't have much in common, but you would be wrong. They're both girthy. They both love football, and they both get racially profiled for completely different reasons. It's like driving to work with your friends, except these friends give away tickets to things and talk to all the important people in town. Your actual friends are probably a bunch of losers. Well, anyway, listen to T-Bone and Tybus live on the Fan app, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's T-Bone again.
Testing live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Ryan Baker, 26 days away from Buckeye football. September 5th, Ohio State welcomes Ball State to the Shoe to open the 2026 season. A big matchup with Texas looms in week two. Ryan Day was on Fan Sports Saturday this weekend and said he's confident that those kind of matchups will continue.
I think the more we do expand the playoffs, you're going to see us, you know, and everybody be more inclined across college football to schedule games like this, which I think is good for college football when you're playing these monster games.
It was not a good week on the diamond for Ohio's Major League Baseball teams. The Guardians losing 2 of 3 to the White Sox. The Reds got swept in the nation's capital by the Nationals. Both of those teams with off days today before starting road series tomorrow. This update brought to you by Roosters. They're giving away 12 Ultimate Buckeye experiences, tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first round postseason game. Register today at roosterswings.com.
With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
Austin Ward coming up in 29 minutes from now. Are we headed to a 24-team playoff? That's coming up in 16 minutes from now. As of for right now, time to blitz the weekend. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present a weekend sports blitz.
Sponsored by Metal Supermarkets. Visit metalsupermarkets.com/Columbus for all your metal needs.
I believe I had that. Bake, what did you have?
I believe I had that I or anybody else shouldn't trust the Cincinnati Reds. They came out of the All-Star break a little bit on fire, winning, I believe it was 4 of 5 series heading to this weekend. And then they just lay an absolute clunker, stinker, whatever you want to say, series getting swept by the Washington Nationals this weekend. The pitching went bye-bye. The hitting went bye-bye. Never trust the Cincinnati Reds.
I like the moves you made at the deadline, though, Bake.
Stop it.
Sending some to my Guardians.
Stop it. How'd that work for you this weekend?
You know,
by the
great.
Way, they were gutless. Did you hear that I had to go to a baseball game last Wednesday? I had to go to a game up there. Two buddies that were in town and wanted to go, and they lost in extras to the Mets. I had to sit through that garbage.
Mets series is brutal. White Sox series is brutal.
The Mets are gutless. Come on.
I believe I had that. Over the weekend, getting to see in person someone that I've been excited about this entire offseason, Kenyatta Jackson. You want to talk about a guy that looks like he could be the first overall pick in the NFL draft? I mean, his body is insane. He's 6'6", 275 pounds. If he can put together a season this year to the ability that he has, there's no doubt in my mind he could be a first-round pick coming in this April's draft. But can he put it all together? Can't be sure. Looked really good over the weekend.
I believe I had that our guy Threes is going to be the head coach around here at some point. I just think that feels predestined at this point. It's weird because I'm not in a position. He's a buddy and all of those things. But I just am so proud of the stuff that he is doing to continue to tie the past with the present and the future. And he's just a culture tornado. The thing that he did when he was on with us on Thursday where he's handing out those Buckeye Grove trees to everybody, or T-shirts with the Buckeye Grove on them. It's just such those little things that he's doing that he it just tracks. He's going to be a head coach somewhere. I don't know where Cersei and the girls and little Mav want to live. I don't know where any of that's going to be. But he's going to be a head coach somewhere. He's going to be ultra successful. I would not be shocked if at some point down the road it's here. He just is checking every single box you'd want to check for someone in the position that he's in. I did not have that. What did you not have, Bake?
I did not have that coming out of this 3-day training camp, fans in the building, that Jay Timmons and Devin McCune might be the most talked about Buckeyes in this first weekend. Fair. There were a lot of guys I thought maybe we would hear about. Maybe it would be Ian Moore. Maybe it would be Riley Pettijohn. Maybe it would be Devin Sanchez, Brock Bourd, Chris Henry Jr. There was a lot of guys in my head that I thought maybe we would hear a lot about. Jay Timmons for sure wasn't on my radar, and Devin McCune really wasn't either.
I didn't have over the weekend that Isaiah West would be taking the majority of reps with the ones the past 3 days. Obviously, Bo Jackson taking a lot of time with the twos. Too early to tell how much that means, but I expected Bo to kind of step up as the bell cow this year. Not saying that he won't be still, but Isaiah West getting a lot of work over this weekend.
Yeah, I think they like the depth. I think they like the depth that they have, and I think you're going to play a long season. You want to make sure you have some game breakers that are out there. I did not have that. Bake's dad makes incredible pies, like truly incredible. It was incredible. So he had a peach one. We had a blackberry one. The boys absolutely crushed him. I can't thank him enough. He had like in the crust, he had like our name inscribed on him, like he's a true artisan. It was unbelievable, Bake. And with those pipes, I mean, the guy's got guns, and he's putting pies together. I just never would have guessed. It was incredible. So thank you to him, and just that was great. It was very much appreciated, and the boys and I probably indulged more than I needed to.
That's what years of laying brick and block will do for you. Work those forearms a little bit.
He's got those all set up there. Player who impressed, Bake.
To me, it was Marvin Harrison Jr. He was one of many that walked at the commencement yesterday at Ohio State, graduated. Mm-hmm. He got a degree in sport industry, and there's no real need for Marvin Harrison Jr. to do that. He's got all the money he needs. He had that before he even played at Ohio State. He has great endorsements, but really cool to see Marv make that commitment and get his college degree this weekend.
Impressed for me over the weekend, Mickey Marotti and the entire training staff. The reason being, I was scrolling through X after I had left practice, and I saw a list of all the players and how much weight they had put on over the course of the offseason. Yeah. And there was about 15 guys that were upwards into the 15 to 20 pounds that they put on in muscle, which is unbelievable. Chris Henry Jr., when he first came in, looked like a 6'5 plank. And now he's filling out. Obviously, we've seen Jeremiah, Legend Bay, all these guys looking ready to play some football this season.
Player who impressed for me, I'm not sure that I have had a better, quicker first impression than the one I had of James Smith. So he came over about 2 minutes. We were in a quick break. Immediately, electric factory, storyteller, interesting, one thing after another, just really impressive for a kid who's still just a kid, who's relatively new around here. If you missed that interview that we did, I know we have it out on our social channels. It's all over all of that stuff. But an incredible story with the family up in Cleveland, his dad wearing Buckeye hats to Bama games, all of that stuff. Just really impressive young man, and you're going to love him. You're going to love him as a Buckeye fan. Player who disappointed, Big.
I'm going to change my answer for something that has happened here in the last 2 or 3 minutes. And it's somebody like James Smith that oozes charisma, but our own Tyvis Powell. Like, I don't understand what he's doing. One, you know you have to do the Cleveland show. Take your stuff that you leave here in the studio when you walk out of the studio and put it in the other studio so you can have it ready. But he doesn't do that, so he comes in here, and I'm in the middle of talking about Marvin Harrison Jr., and he's crawling on the ground like he's throwing grenades at somebody. Just walk in here, interrupt the camera for 2 seconds, get your stuff and get out. Instead, this is a 3-minute ordeal because you're crawling on the floor like a 2-year-old, and it doesn't need to happen.
Fair.
Disappointed for me. Only got to see one day of Legend Bay this weekend, and the one day looked really good. His agility looks really effortless, but didn't get to see him on Thursday or Friday, one of the players that I'm sure a lot of the fans and everybody wanted to see at camp. We got to see him on Saturday, and he looked good. And like I said, the agility is effortless. Like, he looks extremely athletic, but only getting one day, disappointed.
That's on him. I mean, you got to compete. I mean, just think about how tight this is for, like, imagine doing, like, a touches dispersal map. Like, how many touches does Jeremiah Smith need to get? How many balls need to be thrown his way? A dozen? Right? A dozen. Okay, so if you have 60 plays in a game, 12 to 15 going to him, and now start doling those out. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to miss practice, you're missing your chance to be on that list of, we got to make sure he gets a touch. That's a big one.
I know I talked about this Friday, Bo, but obviously the thing around his signing, and we've been led to believe that was all his parents, but there was drama there. This is the second time now there's been a disciplinary issue with him, and maybe it's nothing. But there's a little bit of smoke there that is concerning to me.
I would agree. I think that that's very fair. Disappointed. So yesterday after dinner, we went to play golf at the club. And usually on a Sunday night, it's pretty wide open. You can kind of cruise. But there were people everywhere. I think everybody obviously had the same idea we had. I don't know if there was some sort of a member or something that we had over the weekend. I have no idea. But there were people everywhere to play, despite, and which I normally don't like. I was in the middle of probably the best ball striking round of my life. And I get to the tee on 8, and I go, for some reason, it crept into my head. I'm like, dude, you're kind of crushing it. Like, let's go. Sad. You know how the story ends. Off the 8 tee, about 100 yards, dribbler, all fell apart. All fell apart. It just was suck. It just, I played so well. Everything was clean. I had 2 birdies in the front of, I've never had 2 birdies ever. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And then it all went to hell. Thankfully, we were playing a scramble. Bootsy had to carry me for that hole. We beat the 2 other ones.
But I immediately regret this decision.
Just stupid. And even in the moment, Bake, I'm going, I know that I shouldn't even be thinking like this. Why are you even thinking, dummy? Just hit the ball. Nope. Thought. Went to hell. Bud Kilmer, honorary coach of the week, Big.
There's a big part of me that wanted to give this to Fish for everything that happened over the weekend, but I'm not doing that. I'm not going to be a brown noser like that. So I'm going to say Ryan Day, because ultimately Ryan Day is in charge of everything that happens with that football program, and he may not be the guy that's putting it all on, but he's getting the people to do that. And from all accounts, it was an awesome weekend out there at Ohio State. Everybody got to see, enjoy. Schlegs on the mic, just telling people buy stuff and not tell their wife. Just an awesome weekend.
For me, it's Eric Morris, the new head coach over at Oklahoma State. I was watching some interviews from this past weekend, and they've had more total moves than any other team in the offseason. They had 64 guys out, 54 new guys in, and that's just transfer portal, not counting freshmen. But he had some awesome interviews over the weekend, obviously taking over a team that just went 1-11 and was kind of a dumpster fire, and has labeled his team the Misfits because there's so many new guys in, and every coach is trying to come up with, you know, their kind of scheme or what they can do to motivate their players for this coming fall. And so it was a really interesting interview, and kind of trying to get a really tough situation pushed back into a more positive one. I thought it was a pretty good coaching scheme.
We didn't do them in 20 most interesting, but that is an interesting program to follow. And also the sliding doors moment for them would have been if T. Boone Pickens were alive for free transfer in NIL. Because if he were, they would be Texas Tech. He was a single benefactor of that, and they would have absolutely done that. I'm going to kind of split Bud Kilmer a bunch of ways, because I'm going to start with Ross at the top for maybe being part of the vision of the training camp, Ryan for allowing it, Chris Quinn and travel partners for doing what they do to make it go off without a hitch, Fish for saying this is a tremendous opportunity for us. I think it's one of the coolest things that we do. I think it's one of the coolest things that Ohio State does. And I think it hit on every single level for everybody that was involved. And I do think that potentially you could start to see more of it, which is something we're going to get into next. Could you see more days of this open? The Buckeyes land a massive get in the quarterback position for the future. And a 2014 playoff feels inevitable. It's all coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Retirement from football hits everyone differently. For Devere Posey and Dane Sanzenbacher, it means sitting around watching sports clips on the internet and arguing about them. Search for Didn't Catch That on YouTube and subscribe. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a chance of some scattered showers pushing across the area this morning. Otherwise, mostly cloudy skies. Later on today, some showers and thunderstorms redevelop, and some of those could be strong to severe with gusty winds and locally heavy rain. Otherwise, it's a humid day with mixed clouds and sun, highs in the upper 80s. For tomorrow, scattered showers and thunderstorms are likely. Those too could be strong to severe. We'll see humid conditions with highs again in the mid-80s. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan, taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are, and as always, we are proudly brought to you and sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. years. A couple of things on the college football docket. Number one, big get for the Buckeyes over the weekend. The best quarterback in the 2028 class has committed to Ohio State. Christopher Vargas is his name, the number one overall player in the 24/7 composite, number one overall quarterback in the 24/7 composite, number six overall. So he's been offered since 2024, and the Buckeyes beat out a bunch of suitors. The only thing I will say on this from a quarterback, this in recruiting in general, that this quarterbacks, you pay more attention to it. Dylan Raiola was committed here. So when I see a commitment like that far in advance, I'm always just a little skeptical. Like, it's really cool, but this is 2028. So this is, you know, 2 years out. Before you're talking about a signing day, if they keep the calendar the way that it is, a signing day of December of 27 is when he could sign, and then he would report for camp, and, you know, I would assume be in an early enrollee for 2028. So it's a long ways out. They are crushing it in the 2028 class in general. But again, I approach all of this stuff pretty cautiously, just from the standpoint of we're a long ways out, and a lot of things can happen, Bake.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, though. The 28 class, they've already got two of the top six prospects in the nation committed, according mm-hmm. to 24/7 Sports. And I know Jameer Weiss and Elijah Newman Hall have committed as well. So they're off to a fast start. The crazy thing is, this kid is going into his, he's going into his sophomore season of high school right now.
Junior season of high school,
205 pounds,
yeah.
And he looks every bit of it. Like, he looks bigger than that because he has long arms and long legs. He's real lanky, but man, watching some videos of him, he has a beautiful throwing motion of the football.
And like you said, Bo, it's one of those things that I want to be excited about it, but the transfer portal and all the recruiting that is nowadays, I would not be surprised if 6 months from now, we're hearing he's questioning it again.
Yeah, this is just the world that we live in right now. One thing that I know that Ryan wants, and with his top lieutenant on this, Mark Pantone, one thing that I know that they want to do is to continue to evaluate, recruit, sign, and develop the quarterback position. I think Will Howard was a kind of a one-off stopgap. And if you see that again, that means they missed on an evaluation. Like, I don't think you're going to see Ohio State living in the Miami, LSU, Texas Tech world where you're going to be bidding on quarterbacks in the portal. I don't think that's how they want to go about their business at all. So, right now you're at a lineage where you have Julian theoretically into Tavian. I know they have a kid who just reaffirmed his commitment in the 27 class, and then this Vargas kid after that. So they've got numbers at that position that are homegrown numbers for a while.
Somebody you heard a lot about also coming out, maybe not a lot, but you heard good things coming out of this past weekend, was Luke Fahey. He was a freshman quarterback. Knock on him you keep hearing is he's 5'10". They're like, if this kid was 6'2", you'd be hearing about him a lot more. But you heard a lot of good things about him, and Brady Edmonds is that kid for next year, the class of 27.
Yeah, thank you, Bake. I just saw this on the X platform from, I think it was Heather Dinich. Someone Caleb was kind enough to pass this along to us. Heather Dinich, 12 minutes ago. Is there another college football playoff format option on the table? No guarantee they will talk about it today, but it's something floating before they've ever done a deep dive on 24. But it's not the first time I've heard 20 from a source. The Big Ten hasn't budged from 24. Before we get into the debate on this, Ross was on with us. He was on with T-Bone and Tyvus last week as well. T-Bone and Tyvus asked him about a 24-team playoff. Here was his answer.
For to answer that question for sure. And look, I just think that selfishly, Ohio State could go back to two.
Yes.
Go back to the BCS era. We could go back to four. We could stay at 12. And look, we benefited from that 2 years ago. We benefited from an expanded playoff. 10-2 in the old system, you would not get in. I just think the game's evolving. I think the players want to play high leverage games. I think they're actually, people talk about, well, teams are going to shut down. They're not going to emphasize November. No. As a competitor, you think you're going to shut down in that last game of the year?
Not a chance.
There's no way in it. I just think the game's evolving. People want these high leverage games. Look, people criticize us in this, you know, era for saying, talking about content and, well, guess what's driving it? Revenue. Guess what we have to do? We have to give more money to the athletes. So what that does, expanded playoff.
And Bo, the first part there that we missed because I didn't have the button on was definitively yes. When asked 2014, he said, yes, we're getting there.
Yeah, I think that the big, I think everybody's coming around to it. Why? Because pretty simple. It's just job security for the coaches. Like the SEC didn't want a 2014 playoff. They were 16, 16, 16. I don't want it more than 16, but I think we're going to lose on this. I mean, we can see the inevitability of it. To me, 8 is perfect. I would go smaller, keep it as it is. I think 24 is going to be a real mess to try to fit that in a calendar unless you start the college football season maybe 2 weeks earlier than they currently are. So I think calendar-wise, it's a struggle. You'll obviously get rid of the conference championship games. I think that's probably a win. But I don't want 24. I don't. And there was a quote from someone I saw over the weekend with this, may have actually even been Ross, where he said, you know, you're going to have, oh, it was. He was on with T-Bone and Tyvus. He talked about you're going to have 8-4, 9-3 teams in the playoff. It was in regard to people not wanting to schedule Ohio State past 2030. But if you go to a 2014 playoff, maybe they would. I don't want to see 8-4 in a college football playoff. I don't want to see 9-3. If you watch the, how many first round games have been great that we've watched in 2 years of a 12?
Mm-hmm.
There aren't 24 deserving teams. There aren't 24 teams capable. There's going to be a slew of garbage games. Now you'll watch, and I do give Ross a lot of credit for just saying the quiet part out loud. It's just money. It's just money. It's revenue. It's getting another bite at the apple with Fox. They're going to have to find a way to work with the NFL on this because Fox and ESPN obviously work with the NFL a lot. So they're going to have to find a way to do that. But it's coming and it's inevitable. I don't know if it comes as soon as 2028, but you're going to have 2014 playoff, which is, I mean, just think how stupid that is. Basically, everybody in the top 25 is in the playoff. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And you know my feeling on this. I hate it, and I'll stand by this. If Ohio State goes 9-3 this year, their schedule will probably say that they should be in. I do not think they should be in. I think some of the regular season games should be part of your playoff, and if you can't beat some of these teams, especially later on in the year, then maybe you shouldn't be in there. Like Alabama got in last year. We always talk about Notre Dame in Miami, and Miami kept Notre Dame out. Well, maybe it was Alabama that kept Notre Dame out with a 9-3 record, but the SEC wasn't going to get screwed.
No.
Again, another year in this, they were not going to go into that playoff last year with 3. So that's the way it worked out. I just don't think, like we've talked about Penn State. If Penn State went 10-2 this year with that schedule, that does not deserve to be in a college football playoff. Would they get in? I don't know, but it certainly does not deserve to be in there because to me, winning a national championship should be special and the regular seasons should still mean a lot.
And one more note to think about too, when we're talking about 10-2 and 9-3 and 8-4, these numbers matter because last season, 5 teams went 10-2. That's who we're deciding between. How many teams went 9-3? 9 teams went 9-3. Mm-hmm. Guess how many teams went 8-4? 12 teams went 8-4. So you want to talk about hard decisions right now. When you get to the 24th team or 22nd team, and there's 12 different teams with the same record, it becomes a lot harder to figure out who should be in and who isn't going to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's inevitable. I get it. I don't think we need it, and I think there are bigger issues. But the biggest issue right now for guys like Ross is the revenue part of it. And making all of that work. I think he's got one of the more difficult jobs in sports right now, these athletic directors at big state U's. I think it's really tough to try to answer to all of and feed all of the mouths that need to be fed. And so the simplest thing is just to create more feed, i.e. more money. Mr. Ward, in 2 minutes, Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
He knows everything about the Buckeyes. He's been offered tens of dollars by a certain team to spill his secrets. He's told that certain team to go to hell.
Damn you all to hell!
He's Austin Ward.
Sponsored by Wright Pack Credit Union.
So I got this question, I don't know, I estimate 1,000 times over the weekend after seeing the first couple of days of a Buckeye practice. And I'm sure you got it in your personal life, got it in your business life as well. And that is, well, how'd they look? So I'll just pose that to you. What'd you think? How'd they look?
I think my stock response to that, Bo, is they look awesome. I mean, we all know, and we can put this in the context of the difficulty of their schedule, whatever, and project that forward. But when you go out there and you had, you know, several thousand fans, I think, that are in complete agreement based on what they saw on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, just looking at this team physically, marveling at what Mickey Marotti and Anthony Schlegel and that whole crew got done in the weight room over the summer, you're not going to find, if every training camp for every college football program was open in the first week, I just don't think you're going to find a more impressive collection of athletes than what Ohio State has here. Now, they obviously, the coaching staff has to fit all the pieces together. They have to build game plans that are successful against high-level competition week after week after week once September 5th rolls around. But, you know, if you're looking at every position group, the amount of depth, the amount of athleticism, the amount of size, the amount of strength, I think there's a case to be made that this is one of the deepest teams that, in terms of personnel, that Ryan Day has had in his now 8 years in charge. And I know that sounds like hyperbole, but you saw what I saw, and, you know, in terms of raw clay, you can't ask for more.
No, and Matt said that when he was on with us on Thursday, just the depth defensively, like how many guys, threes even mentioned that, the guys they trust goes kind of multiple deep. Yeah, they don't have that triumvirate on defense, but they've got a bunch of guys. There was some eye-opening stuff. We got freshmen in the nickel. We've got some rotational stuff. What did you make? It's early, right? I mean, these first three practices, but what kind of caught your attention on that side of the ball as Matt Patricia tries to replace those three total studs that they had last year?
Yeah, I think you have to start with what you mentioned at nickel and Jay Timmons. This is not a program that makes mistakes or flips a coin when they determine reps. So to go start training camp with him out there, and not for every single snap, it is not carved in stone, but to have, you know, and coming off of a year where Ohio State proved against Texas with a true freshman and Devin Sanchez at corner, that it will trust those guys if they are ready to go out there and meet the moment. It is not going to be deferential to seniority alone. I think it was eye-opening to see that. There's been a lot of smoke around Jay Timmons for the last couple months. He was having a great summer. The teammates were raving about him. Work ethic, you know, strong spring before a minor setback at the end of it. But then, you know, you get back out there and you see the actual fire, which is him being out there and thrust into those reps against, you know, whether it's ones-on-ones or just getting some of those opportunities, you know, that very much looks like it's a real thing in the works for Ohio State. And the part that is important to keep in mind that you mentioned, Bo, is that because of this amount of depth and because of, you know, the week-to-week ability for Matt Patricia to change both personnel and scheme, it doesn't mean that Jay Timmons is automatically going to play 600 snaps this year, because there's opportunities where Jermaine Matthews could play at nickel. Certainly, Terry Moore is going to have, you know, something to say about that as he gets his feet under him as well. You know, there's going to be rotation. There's going to be back and forth between all of those guys in the secondary. And we saw that as well with Dominic Kelly sliding in there and getting some, starting, quote unquote, starting reps while Jermaine Matthews was working back from what seemed to be a little bit of a nagging injury going into camp. So there's more than enough ammunition right there. And I don't think that there's any reason to doubt that, Matt Patricia, Tim Walton, and Matt Guerrieri will find a way to use all of it.
Yeah, Matt was, it seemed to me, like, kind of excited about it, right? I mean, like, last year it's fun to have three supercomputers, but, like, kind of fun to kind of have a bunch of toys to work with. I think one of the things that maybe, I mean, I know we've talked about it, but maybe not enough, and it kind of hit me when we had Arthur on Friday.
Yeah.
I mean, they got a former NFL head coach as an offensive coordinator. I mean, the guy worked with Aaron Rodgers last year, and he's the offensive coordinator. And it does feel like he could have the type of impact that Matt had defensively. It's early. Did you see anything offensively in terms of his early impact? And do you kind of feel like I do on that his impact could be quite consequential?
I think it has to be. And that's why Ryan went out there and sort of followed that blueprint. Now, it's not just the Matt Patricia blueprint on the defensive side of the football. It was 2 years ago when the swings that Ryan took for the offensive coordinator role were first Bill O'Brien and then Chip Kelly. That tells you what that he understands what he needs and wants out of that role. And Arthur Smith, I think, checks every single box that you could ask for. And I think, first and foremost, that has to be impact in the red zone and in short yardage situations. You know, and we'll see how that transpires as camp goes on. And when you get to September 12th and in a talent-equated matchup game, to use the parlance in the Woody. But I did see some things over the first couple days where, primarily with the way that Jeremiah Smith was being moved around the formation, some of the routes that he was running, some of the concepts that, I think some video is out there of that coming out of the backfield and doing some things that Jackson Smith and Jigbo, I think that was going to be the next element for him in that last season. There was this slot Marv conversation a few years ago, making sure that you can get him in some scenarios where it's not as easy to double or you have to think twice about how you want to defend him. I think some of that is already coming to fruition with Arthur Smith. And, you know, that's great. I don't want to overlook that to skip past the next thing. But, you know, Ohio State was moving the ball between the 20s just fine last year. It was one they got down there that they didn't meet their own expectation, their own standard for success, and turning those into touchdowns. And so that's the part where I remain the most interested. But Arthur Smith also has a pretty extensive background in getting that done in a variety of ways. So I'm pretty bullish on that actually coming for Ohio State. But that's the part that, like, I didn't quite see that on the first 3 days because that just wasn't, an acclimation period priority.
I think that you better be on your P's and Q's if you're an offensive skill position player, because I think the competition for snaps, touches is going to be so fierce, Austin. I really do. I think, man, you can't have bad days. You can't put the ball on the ground if you're one of those skill guys. They have so much depth. And obviously with a guy like Jeremiah and Brandon, who's been around here forever, big time playmaker, like, if Jeremiah's going to get 12 touches, at least 12 balls thrown his way, like, you start doing the math on that, you really can't have the competition, I guess, for just touches is so critical. And this goes to kind of what we saw. I guess Bo was back on Saturday. I know you were out there. Bo was back with the ones on Saturday. Legend Bay missed the first two. Think about Chris Henry, Brock Boyd, McEwen had a great day Friday. Like, the competition for touches is going to be pretty fierce.
Well, and you and I both know that they're not going to alleviate that difficult formula by pushing the tempo. So there just are not going to be that many opportunities to go around. So it goes to your point. If you are out there and the ball is coming your way, you better maximize that, because the next chance, if you blow it, might not come around for several weeks. I mean, that's the way that this is going to work, because you see Brock Boyd making sensational catch after sensational catch. You see Chris Henry Jr. coming into his own physically. You know what Isaiah West, if you're Bo Jackson, has already, you know, planted a flag coming out of summer workouts, and the way teammates were talking about him and then getting the early opportunities with the quote unquote ones on the first few days of practice. Like, there's not a shortage of options to go touch the football for Ohio State, but there won't be an abundance of those to go around. So, you know, it's really going to be interesting, because I think we can all look at this wide receivers group specifically and see and understand that they want to play six, that they want to get back to a deeper array than they have the last couple of years, that they trust all of those guys to get that job done, while at the same time recognizing that Julian Sand and this offense, they're probably not going to throw it 40 times, because they're still trying to limit the snaps, play methodically. That's a philosophical shift. It is not something where we're going to see them go back to warp speed. That's also changed across the football landscape at both levels. It's not unique to Ohio State, but that's the way of the world. But I do think that most of these guys understand that. You're not Devin McEwen, I think, is in line for a huge breakout. He's not going to match Cardinal Tate's numbers. I'd be shocked if that happened.
No, I agree. I'll get you out of here on this one. There are always going to be questions. For you, after 3 days, what is a big question mark for this team? Where are you curious how they answer it?
Yeah, I think if we're going to hold Ryan Day to 10 practices in, getting answers nailed down on the offensive line, you know, how close are they to that at this point? They're now 40% of the way to that mark that he set out, an unofficial deadline. And we saw those first couple days, you know, Austin Sereveld playing left tackle, playing right guard, Ian Moore playing left tackle and right tackle. There wasn't any of that moving around necessarily with Philip Daniels. He was at right tackle, whether he was with the ones or the twos. So, you know, maybe they're close to that point. Josh Padilla has given them something else to think about at right guard. You know, and none of that comes as a major surprise. You and I have talked about that extensively over the last couple months. But, you know, I thought that, and now I'm of the mindset, I guess I should say, that a formation with Austin Sereveld sticking at left tackle and Ian Moore at right tackle and Josh Padilla at right guard the way he's playing seems pretty darn good. Now, there's others that could work. I'm not saying it has to be that, and obviously my vote doesn't carry any weight whatsoever, but that feels like the way that it could or maybe even should go based on the experience that Sereveld has, the ceiling that Ian Moore has, and what Josh Padilla is doing. Because I think sometimes we forget in this discussion that in November, right before that injury happened for Josh Padilla, the timing was so bad. He was just about on the brink of replacing Tiger Shavol in the starting lineup. And then maybe we wouldn't be having this conversation at all if he had that body of work on display. But it feels like that's got to be getting a strong consideration. And this week is going to be almost like mission critical in determining that, if they're going to stick to that timeline.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's nice talking football again, isn't it, buddy?
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't even think Congress exists anymore. We're done with that.
We're good. It's over. Good stuff as always, buddy. Thanks for your time.
All right, see you, bud.
All right, that's Austin Ward, The Beat with Austin Berm, the Roosters live show on YouTube, joining on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Get your thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on
the Feel That. The season is getting closer. Buckeye football comes your way in 26 days. Every game, every season. Proud to be your flagship home for Ohio State football. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Weston Air Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
Bo knows many people.
He talks to the interesting ones on this show.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Monday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
So on Friday, we played the comments that new AD over at Purdue, Tommy McClellan, made at his introductory press conference, saying if you don't want to win national championships, maybe you should go to Indiana. Well, Friday afternoon, he was on the Pat McAfee show, and he tried to clear up those comments.
Yeah, this is an incredible opportunity for us to reestablish what can be possible. Hey, listen, when you have 600,000 living alums, so the eighth largest alumni base in the entire country, and right 55-ish thousand students on our campus, sheesh, that gives you a critical mass of opportunity to do something special. You're in the Big Ten Conference, and you have an incredible coach like Matt Painter who's doing a remarkable work. We want to make sure that standard that he has set in this department permeates throughout the entire all sports, okay? And so while the one-liner, I would say it this way, listen, while the one-liner joke that I gave yesterday about an in-state rival, come on, man, it's an in-state rival, it didn't land well. But I can tell you this, Pat, that we're going to build programs here that are better at winning championships than I am at one-liners,
okay? Thing or not a thing.
It's a decent job to try to cover it. You can take shots at Indiana. You just can't take shots with the word championship. They just won it. So, like, that's the why it didn't land. Like, I'm all for athletic directors having spice and energy and personality and all of those things. And there's probably a million ways that he could have tried to burn Indiana. But that was not it. So, also, it's all pretty harmless, right? It's all fun. Also, whatever the number is on Indiana-Purdue, take the over, because Cignetti's going to put 160 on him.
That's the first thing I thought, too, but I was like, man, and you guys are going to play them this fall, and it's not going to go well for you. Purdue coming off of 1-11 and then 2-10, and he talked about they're having one of the biggest, you know, living alumni bases, which is awesome and can help you in the NIL era. But unfortunately, if you're putting together 1-11 and 2-10, those alumni aren't given money for free.
Bo, that was the thing to me, is I didn't realize Purdue had the 8th largest alumni base in the country. Like, are the Boilermakers a sleeping giant? I know Joe Tiller had some success there in the Drew Brees year and sure. Rondell Moore, but, I mean, is this the next Indiana?
I didn't realize they had that, but I didn't realize Indiana had the largest living alumni base either. Like, that was shocking to me when I found that out. So, look, 8th largest, like, you can piecemeal it together pretty good. A lot of engineering people, a lot of wealthy people there. That's a tough place to recruit to, man. That is a tough place, I think. I think Purdue's tough. And I think it's probably hard for them. I think their branding's fine. All of that's fine. I think it's a tough place to recruit to. Not a lot of, you know, talent to pull from. And the thing that's probably pretty difficult for them is you mentioned the Tiller success that they had with Brees, and then kind of that continued. Like, it wasn't just him. There was several quarterbacks. They had an identity. They threw it when nobody else was throwing it, so forth, so on. I think it's probably really painful for them that they've had historically the much better program than Indiana, and now Indiana reached the ultimate success. So I think that's probably a very difficult spot for them to be in.
I saw this come down from Pete Thamel on Friday afternoon. The Big Ten voted this week to expand the league's football travel rosters to 80 for league games. This goes up from what it had been at 74. The reason is the age-based eligibility rules, and there are no longer red shirts, so there's more players who will have opportunity to play. Thing or not a thing?
I guess it's a thing, Bake. Here's the thing. I saw this. The Division II is doing this. They're going to the 5 years to play five. You either have to be 19 or, you know, that's if you can't turn 19 past this, and it's an age-based thing. Here's the thing that I don't. How did we decide that the give back on this? Did they just not want to deal with red shirts? So they just said you get 5 years?
I think they were just trying to take gray area out.
I guess, but, like, I don't understand why it's five. Why I thought four to play five or five to play four was pretty easy. I don't understand why we have to go to 5 years of eligibility all of a sudden. Like, the record books are going to get annihilated.
I didn't even think about the record books because everybody has five seasons now across the board. Every single player, which is different.
Just think of a quarterback, Isaiah. Just think of a quarterback or a running back who transferred multiple times. Like, I don't know what the who's the all-time isn't like, is it Travis Prentice who's the all-time NCAA rushing leader now? Probably won't be that, but it could be one of those. I think one of the Hawaii quarterbacks had the passing record. If it was Timmy Chang or
it was Colt Brennan,
I'm not sure which one. If it's one of those guys, but like if you get five seasons playing Division I and you bounce around and you throw for 4,000 yards a season, that's 20,000 passing yards. That annihilates the record.
And I will say, as far as expanding the rosters, I do think that this probably benefits Ohio State more than a lot of schools. And the reason is because at Ohio State, you're trying to retain the talent you have. Ohio State's freshmen and sophomores, every other team in the country wants those guys. So if you can get them to play in six or seven more games than they would have been able to if they couldn't be on the travel roster, then maybe you can keep a couple more guys. And that's the only outlook I can give to make it a brighter thing.
It's a badge of it. It's Case Keenum.
Oh,
19,000. And then Dylan Gabriel's second over three stops at Oklahoma, UCF, and Oregon because he basically had 5 years of eligibility. So Gabriel's second. Timmy Chang is third. Do I have the rushing yardage leader off the top of my head? All-time NCAA rushing yardage. Oh, no, I do not. Donald Pumphrey? San Diego State? From 13 to 16? Would not have had that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had that either.
Ron Dane second.
The University of Notre Dame and Notre Dame Global Partnerships announced that Mike Golic Sr. will be joining the Notre Dame radio broadcast that's brought to you by SoFi as their football color analyst. He will join returning play-by-play announcer Tony Simone and studio host Johnny Soper. He will replace Ryan Harris, who's a former Notre Dame offensive lineman and a Super Bowl champ with the Denver Broncos, who had done the job since 2018. He is leaving to focus on a law career, thing or not a thing.
That's pretty high quality. I mean, Golic loves Notre Dame, played there, obviously, and he'll do a very good job. So that's a good job out of Notre Dame.
Home run, 100%, combination of the Notre Dame history, being an alum. He'll kill that one.
Yeah, there are some things that just make sense, right?
Yeah.
He is Notre Dame through and through, and obviously his broadcasting career, calling games and on the radio, speaks for itself.
Absolutely does. Final hour coming up next. Final of our 20 most interesting programs. The Oregon Ducks, they are a threat. In a big, big way. We get to him next. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Ryan Baker. We're less than a month away from Ohio State's opener against Ball State in the Shoe September 5th. Julian Sain is going into his second year as the Buckeyes QB1, and head coach Ryan Day said that it's going to be different for him.
He's got to be a veteran player now, and everybody in that huddle's looking at him as the veteran guy, which completely changes things.
The Buckeyes got a huge recruiting win this weekend when the number one quarterback in the 2028 class, Christopher Vargas, committed to Ohio State on Saturday. The 6'5", 205-pounder chose the Buckeyes over Oregon and Virginia Tech. Rough weekend on the diamond for Ohio State. Teams, the Guardians lose 2 of 3 to the White Sox. The Reds get swept by the Nationals. This one brought to you by BMI Federal Credit Union. Take a vacation from high interest rates with special rates on balance transfers at BMI. BMIFCU.org/Visa for more.
What's the weather outside? Who cares? Bakers and shorts. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is. Final hour of the week. Final of our 20 most interesting. The Oregon Ducks. Hit it, fellas.
We'll expand conferences. We'll expand the playoffs. But we'll never, ever expand our interests. Bishop and Friends present the 20 most interesting programs.
And we close it out with the Oregon Ducks. And for good reason. If not now, when? I just think that's kind of the theory on where Oregon is. If not now, when? Their schedule, as by their standards, is pretty navigable. Boise State, Oklahoma State, first two games. Then you get into Big Ten play, and yeah, they still play the Buckeyes. They do not play Indiana this year. They do avoid some of that. They're at USC in late September, so something to watch for there. In terms of returners, six of them return on offense. The reality is if Dante Moore went the NFL draft, I think he would have been drafted in the top five. I just think that's where he would have been drafted. He decided to come back. And he comes back with five other starters on that offensive side of the ball, including big-time weapons and Jeremiah McClellan and DeCorian Moore. They are back defensively, eight starters back. They have the best defensive line in football returning. Will they play to that level? We will see. But they have the best one on paper returning. They added to that in the transfer portal with the number one safety and maybe the number one defensive player in the portal in Coy Parrish, the safety out of Minnesota. He comes in on the back end of that defense. They were really good in the portal in general. They did lose some guys in the portal, but their gains were much bigger than their losses. They were 13-2. Both of their losses were to Indiana. More on that in just a second, including the loss in the Peach Bowl. Their recruiting class ranking was number 2 overall. Their transfer class rating was 21. But again, they kind of got what they needed to get. So I think that's kind of the big lesson there. Dan Lanning is entering his fifth season in Oregon. He is 48-8. He has won a lot. The big note, and I think this is massive for Oregon, they are in the rare position of having to replace both coordinators in the same year. Will Stein took the job at Kentucky. He was a really highly thought of and a brilliant hire, I think, by Kentucky. And then Tosh Lupoi went to Cal. And Lupoi, not only he's from the Georgia tree with Lanning, so they went there together. Not only is Lupoi big from the defensive side, but Tosh Lupoi is an elite recruiter. So those are two massive things that they have to go ahead and replace in terms of having two new coordinators. The guys in charge of that will be Drew Mariger. He will be the offensive coordinator. And then Chris Hampton will replace Lupoi as defensive coordinator. Here's the thing. If not now, when? But at the same time, sometimes it just becomes who you are. The last 2 years, Oregon has made it to the college football playoff with teams capable of winning it and got bombed. Absolutely bombed. The Bucks, of course, 2 years ago en route to the national title, bombed them in the Rose Bowl. Last year, it was the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. I don't know if we remember this, guys. I know we do, but just as a collective, Indiana beat them 56-22.
56-22. They aren't, when they get to the playoff, they are getting absolutely housed. Now, they did win two games in the playoff. They beat JMU handily and took care of Texas Tech 23-0. But when they play the best teams in the country, they are getting absolutely housed. That is something that I think Lanning has to get over. And just looking at the roster, looking at the schedule, there are a couple of teams out there that we've done this with where you look at all of it and you go, good Lord, if not now, when? And these guys are as much this as anybody. I think they have the most pressure of any team in the country, maybe along with Texas, sort of. But I don't even know if Texas has it quite like Oregon. I just don't know when the stars are going to align this way. Part of that is because I don't know if I believe in their succession plan at quarterback with Dylan Raiola coming in next year. To me, they have everything that they need to win a national title this year. And it starts up front, both sides of the ball, but especially on defense. For me, guys, that's the theme of the Oregon Ducks. If not now, when?
Bo, you mentioned that Indiana loss in the playoffs where they got housed. They also lost to Indiana at home. That was on their home field, and I know that was a closer game. I believe it was a 10-point game, but they lost to them at Autzen Stadium. There are two things that give me pause on this Oregon team, and one is what you mentioned, losing both coordinators. That can be tough to replace. The other one is their Oregon. Mm-hmm. And what have they ever won? And I like Dan Lanning a lot. I really do. I like his brashness. I like his confidence. I like all of it. But he's got to win one that matters. And I know they beat Ohio State in the regular season a couple years ago. But when they got in that postseason, they hit a buzzsaw. Mm-hmm. And that was the best half of Ohio State football I've ever seen in my life in the first half of that Rose Bowl game. This is a team, we mentioned some of the names, and I think Dante Moore's the best quarterback in the country. If he's not the best, he's 1B to Julian Sayin's 1A in my mind. You look at the names on here. Jeremiah McClellan, at one time committed to Ohio State. Their starting running back, Jordan Davison, at one time committed to Ohio State. DeCorian Moore, Ohio State was right there in the end for him in the recruiting process. Coy Parrish, Ohio State was there in the recruiting process with him when he committed to Minnesota. Aaron Scott Jr., he was here. So if there is a team in the country that recruits on the Ohio State level and is in it for the same guys as Ohio State, it is this one. They have a ton of returning guys, returning starters, experience on this team. The last three national championship teams, they were older teams, they were experienced teams, and they had an older quarterback. Oregon has everything here. So your comment of, if not now, when? Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a better time for the Oregon Ducks, but they're the Oregon Ducks.
And the pressure is mounting. It's mounting. The pressure is building up. They love Dan Lanning in Oregon, but how you finish the season matters. What have we talked about the entire offseason in Ohio State? The IU game and the Miami game. Because that's the last memories in your mind. For Dan Lanning and Oregon, they crushed Texas Tech in the first round, which everyone was excited for that game. We thought that was going to be one of the more fun games in the first round. Oregon demolished them. And that doesn't matter at all because IU did the same to them. And the year before, the Buckeyes, when Oregon was the number one overall team in the country coming into the college football playoff, obviously knocked off Ohio State during the regular season. They got crushed by Ohio State. And so now you come into another season where it's the expectations have been the same year after year, but you haven't got it done. And I'll question after this season, if they aren't able to get it done again, does Dan Lanning, does it start to get to him? Because we saw the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry with Ryan Day, and did that start to eat at him? Could it be the same thing with Dan Lanning where he can't get the monkey off his back of winning in the playoffs and even just competing like Texas did a couple years with Ohio State a couple years ago? Like, that was a competitive game. The game with Oregon was not competitive.
No, I think it becomes who you are. You know, it becomes who you are until you change it. And this is a roster that can change it. And to your point, Bake, we did 19 of these. All right, this is our 20th. I don't know that there is another one of these that we've done that in a recruiting portal conversation has as many wins against Ohio State as Ohio State has against it. And they may actually have more. I mean, you go head-to-head with these guys all the time. In portal,
in recruiting. It's oftentimes Ohio State, Oregon. It happens a lot.
It's Christopher Vargas this week.
They are one of the few. There aren't many. They are one of the few that can go toe-to-toe with you. Obviously, very deep pockets with Phil Knight and Nike, and they're going to continue to be very, very good and competitive on those fronts as long as he's there and as long as him and his family are willing to make sure that Oregon wins a national title. But there is going to be some pressure with that. But I think they're also smart enough with Lanning to understand that this can all go away quickly. Like, they're not that far removed from, you know, kind of the end of the Helfrich situation, Willie Taggart. Like, this thing could have gotten really sideways quick.
They moved on quick, though. They were smart with that.
Well, no, Taggart went to Florida State.
I guess that's true.
He thought he was going home. Like, he was the prince who was promised at FSU. Like, who knows if that goes a different way. By the way, that's my sliding doors moment for them, because that thing could have went a lot of different ways. I think that they know what they have with him. I think they're very satisfied, happy. There's not a Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama mentality to the fan base where there's just this relentlessness to win championships. It's much more similar to Texas. I think sometimes people are surprised at Texas's mentality. Texas isn't winning a national championship. That's not their mentality. That's more Oklahoma. That's not Texas. But that's how it is at Oregon. So they're set up in a way to do it. There's no holes here, and the schedule is really navigable for them. Even if they lose the game here, find another loss. At USC, maybe. I mean, they're going 10-2 at worst. At worst, 10-2. So, to me, they're set up in a really nice spot to have a big year. Now it's just a matter of if they can actually seal the deal and do it. But those two coordinator replacements are going to be big. And we'll see if those guys are up to speed on all of that. We hit the categories on the Ducks coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
SPN senior NFL insider Adam Schefter joins Rothman and Ice every Wednesday at 12:30. And he works blue.
Okay.
The NFL Playbook with Adam Schefter is sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
Indeed it is. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a chance of some scattered showers pushing across the area this morning. Otherwise, mostly cloudy skies. Later on today, some showers and thunderstorms redevelop, and some of those could be strong to severe with gusty winds and locally heavy rain. Otherwise, it's a humid day with mixed clouds and sun, highs in the upper 80s. For tomorrow, scattered showers and thunderstorms are likely. Those, too, could be strong to severe. We'll see humid conditions with highs again in the mid-80s. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
Oregon Ducks, the final of our 20 most interesting programs. Hit it. Mighty Oregon, not bad at all. College football 26 adaptability grade, Bake.
I'm giving them an A- here. I think they do just about everything perfect except win in the college football playoff, and I think that's what they want more than anything, and I know that's what Phil Knight wants more than anything.
I've got them down as an A here, and we talked about it a little bit last segment. One of the few teams that you're constantly battling with at Ohio State is Oregon. And in the recruiting, they do it as good as anybody. We even saw this past fall when there were some question marks around Chris Henry Jr.'s commitment. Who were they talking about? Mm-hmm. It was Oregon. So I'm giving them an A.
I think it's an A+. You're not entitled to championships. You're entitled for a chance at championships. And every single year in the NIL free transfer era, they have been contenders for championships. They haven't done it. They fall on their face in a big, big way the last couple of times in the playoff. You're not losing closely. You're getting bombed. But in terms of giving yourself a shot every year, I think they're right there with Ohio State as the best in the business at being able to do so. And unlike T. Boone Pickens with Oklahoma State, Phil Knight's still around and still able to really fund this thing the way that he wants. So I think it's an A+ uniform brand grade, Bake, for the Ducks.
I gave them an A- on this again. The brand is pretty strong. But again, the brand hasn't won at the highest level. In the uniforms, they have a bunch of them. Some of them are really awesome, but some of them don't really hit. To me, I kind of wish they would go back to their old school look a little more and use that more than they do with the duck on the side of the helmet. Yeah. But I mean, most of it's pretty good with Oregon.
Yeah.
I love the duck. The colors, too, they look so bright. I love the duck. For me, Oregon's an A+. And when I was kind of growing up into the high school ages, when they really, really started digging into the uniforms, and everybody loved Oregon's uniforms. And they've kind of, even now, gotten a little bit more crazy with it. But I'm giving them an A+ on this. When I think of college football uniforms, some of the crazier ones, really good ones, Oregon's at the top of the list.
Yeah, I think it's an AA+. It's like a 95 to 97 for me, too. I think the colors are great. I think they were the first. They created an industry. Like, they created it. Like, a different uniform every day. Like, that was something that didn't exist previously. They created the uniform. Phil Knight was smart enough to realize that kids liked a bunch of different uniforms, and he used it 20-some years ago in recruiting, and they were really smart and ahead of the game, to the point even that other schools that were Nike schools got mad and said, hey, we need these too. Like, remember Oklahoma State did this for a while. Like, they had a different uniform every game. Like, other programs were saying, well, wait a second, this is a pretty big advantage. Like, we need this too. And so then Nike had to do it for some other teams as well. But I think in the last 25 years, this is probably the most successful brand bringing along in college athletics in the last 25 years. Historical player you'd pick for this Oregon team, Big.
Bo, real quick before I do that, just talking about the uniforms, I sent this to you and Reese a while ago, but forever now, that black helmet with the silver wings will be known as the Poly Walnuts to me. Forever, it will be known as the Poly Walnuts.
That's true. That's true. Now you're in on the Sopranos, so now you get the Poly Walnuts reference. Yeah, those are great Poly Walnuts. Yeah.
So they have had some great players, especially here in the last couple decades. Some really good quarterbacks. You think of Joey Harrington, Marcus Mariota, Justin Herbert in there, and even some other guys like Dennis Dixon that were really good college quarterbacks. They've had a few running backs, Haloti Ngata. But if there's one spot that this Oregon Ducks team lost some players at, it was on the offensive line. They only have two returning starters, and both of those guys are on the inside. So for this Oregon Ducks team, give me Penei Sewell. And that would change everything, I think, for them on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I tried to go in a lot of different ways here because I clearly thought about Sewell. Haloti Ngata was one, but I'm going to go with DeForest Buckner, throwing him into the interior defensive line. They already have Tatum Tuiungalie on the edges, and Mateo Uiungalie, and then Tatum Tuatui. Some of the more difficult defensive and edge rushers names you could possibly have, but both very good. Throw DeForest Buckner in the middle, and that'll make for a heck of a defensive line.
I love both of those picks. It's hard to not go, and just to not be repetitive, I'm going to go LaMichael James here. I think you put LaMichael James on this team in the backfield alongside Dante Moore with those weapons. I think you're cooking with gas, but a lot of talent to pick from. You forget like the amount of talent that's come through there in the last 25 years. James was a stud, total stud.
He's a Heisman. Like, I think he finished third in the race in 2010 or whenever it was.
Yeah. It's funny, the one running back I kind of thought about here was Kenyon Barner, and I feel like Jordan Davison almost has a little Kenyon Barner in him.
He's got a little of that. Yeah, they had so many, like DeAnthony Thomas was such a cool kid when he was there. They some of those teams were really fun when they were playing with the ultra tempo and Chip. Would they get an official visit from Vince Howard?
I think this is an A. I think the Nike money, and I think all those flashy uniform combos would get him to go up to Oregon and visit.
I'm also saying absolutely he would get a visit up there in Oregon.
This is an A+. I'll tell a quick story. There was a kid I covered in high school when he was in Tallahassee named Ryan Gilliam. He actually ended up going to Oregon. He was a 4-star kid. Florida State wanted him bad. Really good player. He ended up going to Oregon and playing at Oregon. Transferred back. Didn't work out for him. But I remember talking to his folks, and the reason that he took the visit to Oregon to begin with, of course it was uniforms, but it was also the trip to Oregon was so great. The way that they handled the trip.
whether it was the private plane or the first class or whatever, like that trip was such a home run. And I think Oregon actually had to combat that a little bit because in the early years, guys were taking those trips just to have the trip, but not really seriously considering Oregon. That's all started to change. That's not a problem anymore. But I remember that vividly about the trip. So, yeah, Vince absolutely is going to Oregon. He's going to take a visit for sure. Would they be one of the finalists? I don't know, but they would be in the mix for Vince Howard for sure. Coach grade for Dan Lanning, Bake.
I like Dan Lanning a lot. Young guy, says what he thinks, doesn't hold anything back, pretty cocky, pretty brash, pretty confident, however you want to call it. However, he's got to win one. He doesn't have the big one on his resume yet, yeah. So I've got this as an A- for Dan Lanning, but this could easily start sliding downwards very quickly for him.
I like Dan Lanning a lot, too. I've got him down as an A right now, but he's missing the national championship. 2 years ago, coming in as the number one overall team, getting the win at Ohio State, at home. Against Ohio State, I think was a huge win for him. He's just had the past 2 years end in like dumpster fire fashion, obviously losing to the Buckeyes and to IU the way he did, but I've still got it down as an A.
I think he's probably the answer to the question of who is the guy who feels the most like Ryan before Ryan won it all. Now, the difference is he's coaching at a place where they don't demand that. Like, I don't know that they demand he win a national title. I don't know that there's that type of pressure at Oregon. I think he's an A-. I think him and Sark, but I think Sark is under way more pressure just because I think the Texas microscope mm-hmm. with Arch and all of that is different. But, yeah, I think he's an A-minus coach. I think he's tremendous. But, yeah, that is alarming. I mean, you get to the national semifinal and you get to a Rose Bowl and you get bombed. It's one thing to lose.
Yeah.
It's another thing to get bombed. Like, there's a disconnect there.
In Lanning's defense, I truly believe 2 years ago they were the second best team in the country. I think they just ran into an Ohio State team that was on a mission and wasn't going to be stopped by anyone. I don't believe they were the second best team in the country last year, but getting beat like they did to Indiana, as you mentioned, in the playoff is very concerning.
56-22, my God. Sliding doors moment for Oregon. I'll go first on this one since I already gave it to you. It's Willie Taggart. So they hired Willie Taggart. He was there 1 year. They went 7-5. Then Florida State really believed that Willie Taggart was the right guy to inevitably, it was his dream school, all of those things. It was the only place he would have left Oregon for. He did. He went to Florida State. It completely bottomed out. Then he went to like FAU and they didn't win. Now I think he's a running back coach with the Giants. But my God, if he had stayed at Oregon, what happens here? So to me, that's the sliding doors moment for Oregon. Go ahead, yours, Bake.
I'm going to go back to the hiring of Mike Bellotti. And I know Rich Brooks was there for a long time before him. And Oregon had been a pretty good program. But it seemed like once Mike Bellotti got here, and maybe that was started to be the infiltration of the Phil Knight money too.
Yeah.
But I think Mike Bellotti took this program to new heights. And for the most part, it's stayed there since. I mean, you got to remember, Mike Bellotti interviewed for the Ohio State job when Jim Tressel was hired, and there were a lot of people that think he should have gotten the job.
Bake, I talked to Mike Bellotti about that very thing at the Rose Bowl, and he turned down Ohio State. Yeah. Yeah, he really wanted to go. His wife didn't want to leave the Pacific Northwest. I don't know if there was an actual formal offer, but he wanted to go to Ohio State. His wife did not want to leave Eugene, and so he ended up staying. But, yeah, no, it was – I talked to him about that at the Rose Bowl when – was it 2010?
The one for me, going back to 2007, Dennis Dixon getting hurt. They were 8-1, ranked number 2 in the country. He goes down, then they go on to lose 3 of their next 4. But they were in the driver's seat of making the national championship game that year. Obviously, losing your quarterback takes you out of it.
He was the Heisman favorite, too, at that point. Win it all, make a playoff too soon, or flame out for the Ducks, Bake.
It's win it all. As you said, if not now, win.
It's a clear win it all.
Yep. There haven't been too many win-it-alls, maybe four or five. I think tomorrow on the program, we're going to kind of recap what we learned on 20 Most Interesting in the 11 o'clock hour. But there aren't too many win-it-alls. This is absolutely a win-it-all. Rob Moses, the editor, GoDucks.com. He joins us for Perspective in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Keep your friends close
and your producers closer.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, 20 Most Interesting closes with the Oregon Ducks. For Perspective on the Ducks, we head to the Pacific Northwest on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Rob Moseley, editor, GoDucks.com, joining us. Rob, thank you so much for taking the time. Before we get into this year's team, and obviously they're loaded, I'm wondering if you have the answer to this. Whose idea was it initially? Because we're talking about the branding of the Ducks, and over the last 25 years, all the uniforms, all the things that they've done so effectively. Do you know whose idea it was initially to do the uniform thing, to a different one every day, all of that?
I think it started with, you know, the film night, Mike Bellotti, Tinker Hatfield, Todd Van Horn, kind of Oregon football, Nike, brain trust back, you know, kind of mid, late 90s when Phil Knight really started to get involved in things and kind of, you know, like everything else around here, kind of hit hyperspeed during the Chip Kelly era.
It was so brilliant. It was so brilliant as a differentiator, and it set the table for one of the preeminent programs of the country in the last quarter century, Rob. For this year's team, this was kind of the way I summed it up as we were kind of breaking them down. If not now, when? This team looks completely loaded. I don't see many weaknesses. When you assess this Oregon roster, the schedule, all of it, what is your answer to that?
No, I mean, I think that's legitimate. I think that's kind of where Dan Lanning and all his predecessors have built this program to the point where now, year in, year out, nobody really has to talk about, hey, this is a team with national championship aspirations, which in years past around here, you know, every few years you might have a team that fit that bill. And now you just sort of expect to be in the consideration preseason. You know, that's kind of a new thing for Oregon in a way it's not for some other programs that have different traditions historically. So, yeah, I mean, I think the answer to the question, if not now, when, is, you know, I think with the level this program recruits at these days, you know, this doesn't feel like an all or nothing season, where I think in the past that might have been the case.
Yeah.
You know, you go back to Joey Harrington senior year in 2001 or maybe when Mariota was here at his peak and had things clicking there. You know, it did feel like certain seasons, if you didn't take advantage of them, you weren't 100% sure when the next chance would come along. I think the way this program recruits now, that's different. And yet, for sure, I think, it just common sense is you look at the roster, you look up and down, you look by position, you don't see holes, and you think, okay, yeah, this is certainly among the class teams in the country entering this season.
Yeah, Rob, but honestly, like the only thing, I mean, from a roster standpoint, I don't have anything and no notes. I think that they're obviously some new guys up front, but I'm guessing they'll work that out. Your point on how they recruit and how they portal, they're not going to go anywhere on any of that. But you do have two new coordinators, and that is rare for a team that my hunch will start the year either first, second, or third in the country in the AP. What can you tell us about the new guys in charge of the offense and defense and the massive task of replacing Will and Tosh?
Yeah, Drew Maringer on offense, Chris Hampton on defense. I mean, both of these are guys with coordinator experience. They're back in the chair for the first time in a few years. Both of them met with media after practices last week, which was the first week of preseason camp here. And both said, yeah, it was an adjustment coming back and getting back into the coordinator chair. You know, Chris Hampton was talking about helmet communication and how that wasn't the case when he was a coordinator last. I think it was in 2022. And so that's kind of changed things operationally and the sort of thing he has to get used to. You know, I think for both guys, just the administration with the way rules have changed and staffs have just exploded over the years, there's just so much to administer and oversee on each side of the ball. I think for both of those guys, that takes a learning curve. But they're also two guys who were internal promotions. They know the systems that Dan Lanning likes to run. I think particularly defensively, you know, Dan Lanning, given his background, is going to have a hand on things and then going to be a voice there. And offensively, you know, things have looked fairly similar, whether it was Kenny Dillingham or Will Stein previously. And I think the expectation is that that Drew Merringer, having been around here for a few years, you know, we'll keep things looking relatively similar, with obviously with some twists and tweaks and things like that. But I think there's a sense of a little bit of continuity too there. So even though it's new faces in those chairs, you know, obviously the hope around here is that, you know, there isn't too much of an adjustment period.
I can't imagine they will be. The standard is the standard. If I would have asked you a year ago, if you'd have been on, and again, we had Oregon in 20 most interesting last year as well, do you think Dante Moore will be back for one more season? What would your answer have been? And then what a pleasant surprise, if indeed it would have been a surprise.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously hindsight's 2020, so it's hard to go back in time. But I think my answer would have been something along the lines of, do I think it's likely? No. And yet in this era of NIL, things have changed so much over a few years ago. And those decisions have so many more facets to them than they did, you know, with players being able to be compensated. So you can make that decision a lot harder. Also just, I think the path he took too with, you know, being a guy who went away from home, struggled at UCLA his freshman year, came here for a year and just had a mental reset year behind Dylan Gabriel. I think he's a guy who's been through some hard things. You know, his mom's had some health issues. Has a headier perspective, on the big picture than perhaps some other guys. So, would I have said it was likely? No, but I also would have said, hey, there's some reasons to think, hey, it's possible.
He's certainly going to be in play for the number one pick in the draft next year. Just in talking to him and observing him as you have through the years, where are the fine tuning, if any, that you think needs to happen there?
It's you know, from a technical aspect, playing the position, you know, I'm not an expert there. I'm sure there's some things that Coach Merringer's working with him on, and Koakai, who's his position coach. And there's voices there. You know, he can be a guy who can be soft spoken. I mean, he's not a guy who just exudes competitive energy outwardly the way some players do, but I think he's grown into like using his voice. And again, he has kind of that heady maturity where it's a different kind of leadership in the huddle. He has a way of keeping things light too. So but ultimately I just think, you know, getting back to the top, and you're talking about a team that wants to compete for a national championship, your margin for error is so slim once you're talking about trying to differentiate yourself from the other, whatever, 3, 4, 5 truly elite programs in the country. I think for me, it's just, hey, do what you do really, really well at a consistently high level, rather than you need to fix this or change that. Because it does come down to just executing in those key moments the way Oregon hasn't been able to, in its last game the last 2 years, and not feeling like the stage is too big, just doing what you do, one more time, on that big stage.
Talking to Rob Mosley, editor, GoDucks.com, talking about the Oregon Ducks, our final of the 20 most interesting programs heading into 2026. Rob, you mentioned those last two times, the way that those seasons ended. Only one team gets to win it all, right? So there's going to be teams that lose, but the way that the Ducks came up short, the loss to the Buckeyes in the Rose Bowl a couple of years ago, and then the loss to Indiana last year. How much does that eat at Dan? How much, I mean, we had to deal with that a little bit around here with Ryan and the losses to Michigan. It was like, gosh, just get this monkey off of his back. How much of that does that eat at Dan, just the way that they performed on those big stages?
No, I mean, as competitive as he is, and then the fact that he's getting asked about it a ton, I mean, I think that is the number one question coming into the season about this program is, you know, can you get to a big game like that late in the season against another national championship caliber team, particularly if it's a rematch, and not have it be one-sided like it was the last couple of years, and instead come out on top. And I think it might be too much to say it's all consuming, but I think it's on his mind all the time. You know, he talked about on media day how, they studied some things that NFL teams do, because NFL teams are used to playing division rivals twice in the same season. So how do you approach a rematch, and what kind of tweaks are you looking to make to not present some of the same things? Again, to your point, I mean, those were both really, really talented teams, national championship teams. On one hand, kind of there's no shame in coming up short against teams of those caliber. On the other hand, when you want to be one of those teams, again, the margin is so slim, you want to figure out a way to come out on top. And as we know, the margin didn't seem that slim in those two matchups in particular, too. So there's still a bit of a gap to be closed. And yeah, I think it's something that is absolutely top of mind to this whole staff entering this season.
Rob, great stuff, man. Thank you so much for your time. We'll see you in early November when you guys make the trip out here.
It's a plan. Thanks for having me.
All right. Good stuff. Rob, editor, GoDucks.com, joining us from the Pacific Northwest on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Get your three things on a Monday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Football.
Training camp report.
This report is brought to you statewide by St. Light Auto Glass and Bob's Discount Furniture. Ohio State's fall camp is now in full swing, and the Buckeyes have been showcasing the work they've put in during the offseason. For a roster with 51 newcomers, the weight room has been an environment not just for improving physically, but for building team chemistry. This summer, head coach Ryan Day and his leadership committee assembled to put players into what they call mini squads.
During the season, we do a lot of work with our units. But in order to build connectivity, we want to make sure that we have guys working with each other all season in different position groups, because we know adversity is going to hit. And when adversity does hit, we got to come together. And the only way to do that is to build a connected team. And so that's why so much of what we do in the summer is going to have an impact on how the season runs out. That's why I really say this is the backbone of our program, what happens with Mick in the weight room during the summer.
We'll have more after this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, five-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob!
Bob's Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Light Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at SafeLight.com. Safe Light Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
You previously heard Ryan Day mention the offseason work in the weight room as the backbone of his program. Day praised strength and conditioning coach Mickey Marotti and added he plays a key role in the development of quarterbacks such as Julian Sand.
Let's just say, for example, we're leading some sort of, ab workout, and we're doing 50 sit-ups. He makes the quarterbacks scream out the commands. When you first get there, if you're not somebody that's ever, barked in your life, you gotta learn how to carry your voice. And then, he'll force them to get up in front of the group and say, this is why we're doing this. We have 50 days before we play the first game. And the first time they do it, it doesn't look very good. And he makes them do it again, and he makes them do it again, and he makes them do it again. And over time, they get callous to it, and they learn how to do that. And so that's, again, some of the things that he does, obviously, Mick. And that's why his value is so critical to what we do.
The season opener for the Buckeyes is September 5th against Ball State. We'll have another report tomorrow. This is Tyler Danberg on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Hair volume to sale, Buckeye Nation. Join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss this ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeye sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
Life is full.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
They've all been paid by the Cleveland Browns. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, gentlemen, what are the poll today?
The Daily Fan poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. Should the Browns name a starting quarterback sooner rather than later? 48.6% of the fans say no, let them compete. 31.5%, yes, Sanders should start. 19.8%, yes, Deshaun Watson should be named the starter.
So I'm just curious, like, do people understand what a competition is? Do you understand that there are winners? And if you enter into a competition, there are winners and losers, right? If you guys are in the middle of a competition and you start to win, then you are going to be the winner of the competition. Like, none of this stuff's predetermined. This has been a frustrating one, man. Just the dialogue over the last several days with this has been really, it's just utter nonsense. So much of it is utter nonsense from people who just have no clue of what's actually going on. And it's all for clickbait, and it's unfortunate. It really is.
I wonder how much of that is the Shador Sanders part of this and just what a polarizing figure he is.
But why is he polarizing?
Because of who his father is.
He had a really good career at Colorado. Really good career at Colorado. Incredible career. Resurrected a program. His dad's the greatest cover corner maybe in the history of the sport. Like, all of those things. I don't understand why Shador is incredibly likable, but I think, like, sometimes the swarm around creates this back and forth, which is just not based at all in reality. So it's been a tough one for sure. And so I think Todd's doing a hell of a job with it, quite honestly. From what I've seen, and we'll see what today looks like, and we can report back tomorrow on all of that. Time for three things on a Monday. Go ahead, guys.
Three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me. So if you listen regularly, you know that oftentimes on a Saturday or Sunday night, the boys and I will go out and play quick nine, quick round of golf, try to get it in either Saturday, Sunday night, usually after dinner, or sometimes we'll do it before. So Saturday, NBC had a football scrimmage in the morning, and then he went to like a pool thing. He's a freshman now. And so he's like, around 4 o'clock, he's like, "Hey, Dad, I think I want to play golf. And I'm like, "Yeah, dude, let's do it. I'll get a tee time. We'll go 6:20, 6:30, something like that." And he's like, "No, me and my buddies are going to play golf."
Ouch.
And I just went, "And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon." I just went like in my office and just drank. Just like, God, this is where we're done? Like, the old man's cast aside? No, we did play yesterday, and we played some hoops, too. But damn, not great.
Stings the nostrils.
Oh, jeez, dude. Broke me. God, who am I going to go play with?
First thing for me, last night I was driving home from Lewis Center to Hilliard, and it was probably around a little bit after 9 o'clock, and I swung on to 270 from 23, and I've got to tell you, I saw some of the best lightning that I have seen in years. And I am someone who, when I was a kid and I saw the movie Twister, I was like, God, that would be so cool to be a storm chaser. I think that would be an awesome job. So I've always had a fascination with storms.
Yeah.
But this lightning, I mean, it was orange in color, and there were bolts coming straight down, shooting across the sky. It's the best laser light show I've seen in quite some time.
And it's happening right now outside again. It is crazy downpouring outside now. It's finally gotten down here to Columbus. But first thing for me, yesterday went out to my parents' house and we had a big family dinner. And I really enjoyed telling some stories with my dad, and my brothers were all there. And we were talking about Fair Week, because this is the Hartford Fair, which was my fair growing up. Mm-hmm. It was, you'd be getting ready to take the pigs, and my older brother did cows, so getting ready to take the dairy feeders. down to the show and just reliving some of those memories of like myself and my brothers who were like 9 and 10 years old doing the thing that my dad loved so much, but all of us were so bad at it. and just the funny stories of him trying to guide us as we're trying to mangle these huge animals and keep them in line as little kids. It was a fun day.
Did you, you guys didn't name them, right?
No, of course we named them.
Even though did you sell them to slaughter or were they milked?
We sold them to slaughter. Yeah, we named them early on, and then as you got older, you realized you probably shouldn't be naming them.
No.
But love the Hartford Fair, the biggest little fair in the world.
That's great. Number two for me. So my Apple MacBook, which crapped out on me, ironically, when we were at camp on Friday, something wrong with the screen. I have AppleCare, all of this. So I set up an appointment.
That's why you didn't have a computer on Friday.
Yeah. So I set up an appointment with AppleCare. It was Saturday at 12:35. So I get there at 12:30. There's a line. The place is a zoo at the Apple Store, all of this stuff. And I said, yeah, I got an appointment at 12:35. So there's all these people. She's like, you go sit at this table. Okay, fine. I'll go sit at the table. 12:35, 12:40, 12:45, 12:50, 1. 1:05, a manager comes over to me and he goes, have you been helped? I said, yeah. They told me to sit at this table. I have an appointment at 12:35. It's 1:05. I said, do all of these people have appointments? And he goes, no, they don't. And I said, then I think you're missing the point of the appointment. The point of the appointment is, I will be here at this time for your help. I'm compensating you for your help. I took the time to set up an appointment. I would like to be helped at the time of the appointment. If none of these people set up an appointment, then you need to have a separate line for non-appointment people. And they can wait. That's on them. I sold all my Apple stock. I'm done with that company.
If you hadn't sold your soul to Apple, you wouldn't have to worry about this. You can come join the Android side, Bo, if you'd like.
I can't be a green. Sorry.
Second thing for me, Bo, you know I'm watching The Sopranos, and I'm heading towards the end of season 4 now. We're towards the end of that. And one of the things that I've been critical of is some of the endings of the characters. I felt like they've come too fast, and like we could have done more with this story.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Did I not see the ending of Ralph Cifaretto coming? This was an ending that had my attention. Most of them I've been disappointed in. This one was good.
Pie oh my.
Woo!
Second thing for me, coming up next, we got Rothman and Ice at 1 p.m. taking calls on The Floor Is Yours. And then joining at 2 p.m., Jeremy Birmingham, going to give you all the updates from fall camp for the Buckeyes over the weekend.
And we're up against it, so no time for three. You have that to look forward to, which is very, very nice. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.